the high desert in the great American Southwest. How did you all? Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's 25 time zones, all of them smothered by this program, meaning lots of coverage. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Happy, privileged, pleased to be with you for the weekend. And what a weekend it is going to be. In the next hour, Will Thomas' latest on chemtrails, on what they might be, if they're even real. It's going to be one hell of a show coming up in a moment. Whitley Strieber, sort of a surprise visit from Whitley for a number of reasons, one of them being the hurricanes. And now we're going to talk about that, believe it or not, with Will as well. But got to start out tonight by sending you to the website. Last night, one of my ham radio friends pointed out to me that there was a hurricane headed my way. And I said, no. Hurricanes born on here in the West go up the Mexican Peninsula and take off out across Pacific and go, you know, become typhoons and bother the Pacific world, the rim. It was like losing a bet. And so here comes this projected path of Javier. And I went, oh, my God, it's a hurricane in the desert. Well, last place you would expect a hurricane would be tromping across Arizona, right, into perhaps ultimately Salt Lake City. That's how they had it forecast last night. And I looked at that, and I just about blew a gasket. Then I got this email a few minutes ago. Hey, Art, my husband has a hot dog cart on Route 80 in David, Arizona. St. David, Arizona, I guess. This is the extreme southeast county of the state. He said this afternoon, huge gusts of wind came through and not only blew the umbrella sky high off the cart, but the cart itself was shaking like a leaf for several minutes. Now, this is no rinky-dinky little plastic push cart. This is a heavy steel one and weighs about 1,000 pounds. It was shaking like a leaf. Unbelievable. A hurricane in Arizona. What next? Typhoons in Chicago? And I've got to agree with Linda. It's pretty weird. So I put up the path, and I guess it's getting ready to rumble here in the desert. Now, of course, there is no hurricane that's going to cross the state of Arizona and have any poop left at all. I don't think. I hope. But there is one path I have never seen as an adult. Maybe it's happened before, but this baby is, it's gonna go right across the biggest part of the American Southwest desert. Does that really happen? And one other item, up front. Well, here, look at our forecast, our local forecast synopsis. Moisture associated with Hurricane Javier will bring a chance of showers and thunderstorms to northwest Arizona through Sunday and to far eastern portions of southern Nevada and southeast California. Meanwhile, anyway, it goes on. And then our forecast is for 40-mile-an-hour winds today, tomorrow, and then 20 to 30 Sunday night. And then I guess Monday it's a return to some state of near normality, though it's going to cool off greatly here. Another big item tonight is what's going on the California-Nevada border. That's pretty weird, folks. There have been, to my understanding, about 200 earthquakes in, I don't know, the last 24, 48 hours, very short amount of time. 200 earthquakes, the largest being 5.5, right on the border of Nevada and California. Now, is something big about to happen? I would think that would be at least a reasonable question to ponder when you look at 200 earthquakes on the border between California and Nevada. Maybe it's not California to fall into the ocean. Maybe it's Nevada leaving California partially an island in the south or something. Anyway, strange times we live in indeed. In a moment, Whitley Strieber. By the way, just briefly, the remnants of Hurricane Ivan are raging, as you know, across the American, well, northeast or southeast, really, right now. And it's not done. What do we have so far? 45 dead here in the U.S., 70 in the Caribbean. This has been a bad hurricane. It's been a really bad hurricane season all the way around. And here to talk about that and a few other things is Whitley Strieber, co-author of War Day, one of my favorite books of all time. And, of course, probably best known for Communion still, although that may be challenged by his co-authoring The Coming Global Superstorm, which was the genesis of The Day After Tomorrow, the movie and book. And I don't know how many of you saw it, but ABC World News Tonight, Whitley, I bet you missed it because I called you, but ABC World News Tonight ran a piece on China and the disappearing ice in China. Yes. And as part of that, they mentioned that the movie that was, you know, our book, really, The Day After Tomorrow, was required viewing for Chinese scientists, climatologists now. And I
That's
went,
right.
Wow! How you doing, buddy?
Well, it's because they've had absolutely incredible weather changes in China in the past, especially the past 6 months, really, with devastating floods and storms of a kind that they have really never seen before, and the government is concerned. One of the reasons is that pollution above China is really intense, and the more of this there is, the more violent the weather changes in a given area. And you know, it's so intense in China that we now routinely, it used to be a news item when clouds of smog basically from China reached the United States. Now they reach here routinely throughout the winter.
It's really
weird.
We
no longer think about it.
Yeah, it's very weird, Whitley. Weird indeed. We've had it here where it's like a yellow gook descended on you, and it takes 2 or 3 days, and then our weather forecast people locally figure out what's happened, and it's come from that away. They also
from China, yeah.
Yeah, they showed deserts going marching right up to the very edge of towns in China where there had never before been deserts.
The Chinese are, if you can believe this, they have a plan in place to move Beijing if necessary, if they are unable to stop the deserts. And the deserts started during this particular desert started during the crazy agricultural lunacy of the Great Leap Forward, back in the 50s and 60s. And once the desert got underway, there was just never any way to stop it. And it's basically a man-made phenomenon built out of an idiotic ideology and not a lot of science.
You're telling me they have a plan to move the city of Beijing?
To move Beijing, yes.
That's
whether
that's
they'll
incredible.
Have to execute this plan or not, I don't know, but they do have one.
Well,
isn't that incredible?
Yes, it is. We have a plan to move the Earth. Actually, NASA had this plan to move the Earth, you know, if global warming gets too out of hand. That was one plan that somebody came up with that was a legit plan in NASA to have an asteroid.
It's going to take a kind of a big rocket, Art.
Yeah, well, they're going to direct an asteroid toward a close hit with Earth, and that would blow us back a little bit, the whole planet, and cool us off. And then when things got better, they'd move us back. I wasn't sure about that plan then, and I'm not sure about moving Beijing either, but maybe.
Well, I don't know if it'll ever happen, but it has been certainly in the Chinese press from time to time.
Uh-huh.
But you know, you were talking earlier about Ivan and rainfalls. The rainfalls in Ivan have been monstrous. Pittsburgh got 6 inches of rain yesterday, and that is an all-time record daily rainfall for that city. In fact, the whole weather system is in a bizarre state. NOAA announced a couple of hours ago that August was the seventh coldest August in the lower 48 on record.
To which many people out there will go, what are you, okay then, so what's all the screeching about this global warming baloney?
Oh, I know. The reason for it is quite simple, and I have this quick watch on my website on Unknown Country, and if you click on it, one of the first things you can see is something that shows a temperature gradient of the of the oceans, and off and on all summer, both the North Atlantic and the North Pacific have been much colder than normal, and that's because the great currents that normally drive up that far in the summer are not there. They're ocean currents. They're just not strong. And the result is that we're going to have, by the way, quite a cold winter, too, I would think, for the same reason.
A cold winter.
Ironically, just as you and I predicted, cooling is a result of global warming.
People just can't grasp that, the dynamics of that. To them, cool is cool, warm is warm. And they can't understand how one would drive the other, but you're explaining now it's the ocean currents. Right.
Well, you know, with the hurricanes, we have a very, very unusual situation. Hurricanes run in cycles, and we've known about these cycles for a long time. And we're last year and this year we're coming up onto one of the active periods, but there is an enormous difference this time. There's something out there that has never been there before, and nobody knows what its effect will be. But we do know this. Its effect is to strengthen and intensify virtually all storms, and that is that the stratosphere, which is the layer of air above the troposphere, which is the one that hugs the ground, or the one we breathe, has since 1993 been getting much colder, whereas our part, the troposphere, has been getting much warmer. The greater the temperature difference between these two levels of atmosphere, the stronger storms will be. This is why Ivan broke a record. It was the fastest developing hurricane in history.
And
it's never been recorded.
And I believe the southernmost developing as well, the fastest southernmost.
Well, except for the one that was off the coast of Brazil earlier this year, which was a real anomaly. I mean, that one was, in April, was unheard of.
By the way, while we're on the subject of anomalies, Whitley, have you seen the path of Javier? It comes right across Arizona.
Right upright Arizona. Well, I'm in Los Angeles right now during what is supposed to be the Santa Ana season. It's supposed to be hot. It's cold.
Well, I know, but the hurricanes traditionally do not cut across the desert.
Not often. In fact, it'd be interesting if you find a track like that and what it's doing there. How it got there is a really unanswered meteorological question.
Yes.
Because it should not have moved the way it did at all.
Well, you know, I think everybody agrees. We're having increased violence, increased strength in the weather we are getting. The cycles are more severe, and clearly we're getting some pretty severe weather. There's no question about it. It's getting worse.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see what happens to Hurricane Carl, which Gene is kind of disintegrating because of the fact that it's come up against a pressure system that's blown out, continental pressure system's blown out to sea. I think that we're quite lucky with this cold weather that's coming, that we've had, because I think that's gonna stop this hurricane season in its tracks. I would be surprised to see if Carl gets to the continental United States at all. I think it's going to go out into the Atlantic and dissipate as it goes north, I hope. Because, I mean, after all, that's a K, and, you know, that's getting down there in terms of hurricanes, considering that they're named in alphabetical order.
That's right. So it's been a pretty bizarre season, and you think...
Very bizarre.
And you believe it's due to this temperature variation between the two...
Oh, sure it is. It's... Well, you know, we received reports at Unknown Country, a lot of people, as you may imagine, I'm sure they send you the same thing, send us weather stories. And we received about five or six reports in July of a snowstorm that had occurred, apparently it occurred on both the Louisiana-Texas border, northern Louisiana and east Texas and in southern Arkansas, where there was snow coming down, which melted. It didn't stay on the ground, of course, at that time of year. But it was an indication that a storm had very, very high cloud tops at that time of year for there to be snow developing within the storm.
Indeed.
That was quite unusual. And that sort of anomaly is, you know, there was this massive hail, couple of really, really extraordinary hailstorms, and now we have these very fast developing hurricanes that are very intense, and we can probably expect some extraordinary winter storms as well. And on into the future, as long as this temperature gradient remains extreme between the stratosphere and the troposphere, storms are going to remain.
Do you want to hazard a guess about what is driving all of this? I mean,
I know what's driving it. There's no question about it at all. It's carbon dioxide in the lower atmosphere is retaining, causing the heat to be retained in the lower atmosphere.
Well, there's a lot of fighting.
Out.
A lot of fighting about that, Whitley.
Well, I'm sorry, it's there.
Let's see. Here's the story.
Math is there.
Here's a story. Just one sec. From Reuters, Whitley. The story is global warming may spur fiercer hurricanes. Experts. Now, you know what they're saying here, that what you just said. However, the Republican-led panel heard testimony from several scientists who said that emissions known as greenhouse gases were gradually raising the Earth's temperature would contribute to blah, blah, blah. However, 10 climatologists and scientists sent a letter to Senator McCain, the Arizona Republican who heads the committee, saying there is no scientific evidence, none, of any link between severe weather, like hurricanes, blizzards, heat waves, and global warming.
It's just in a quite straightforward and simple way, it's not true. In nature, two and two is always four. No matter how much your ideology or person's ideology wants it to be 3.6 or 1.9,
yeah,
it's always going to be four.
Well, and the administration is pretty schizophrenic on this because, on the other hand, the other day, somebody within the administration high up, issued a paper which essentially reversed the Bush administration position on global warming. So it's kind of schizophrenic.
Well, it's very schizophrenic right now. And I don't think that they are, you know, nobody really was expecting things to be quite like they are. There is so much strange stuff happening, not only in the weather, but in terms of animal behavior.
Animal behavior, you're right.
Yeah, in terms of anomalies of various kinds, like almost there's a huge die-off of seabirds off the Scottish coast, all
right
up in that whole area of the world because
right. The
plankton has died out and the small fish that they eat have died. So the seabirds, there's all kinds of bizarre stuff happening.
To which a lot of people will email me and say, so what? So some plankton dies, what the hell?
Unfortunately, they will find out so what, because once again, nature is all mathematics. It's got no ideology. It doesn't agree or disagree with any particular political party. It just does what it's going to do. And we can see by carbon dioxide measurements that are taken every year in Hawaii, that to the horror of scientists this year, the carbon dioxide content of the atmosphere had increased twice as fast in the past 12 months as they had predicted, meaning that we're going to see more change. And the difficulty is, it's like the hurricane cycle. This cycle would be there if we didn't exist on the Earth, if we weren't even here. But the changes in the atmosphere that are in part being caused by us, in part they're being caused by volcanic activity and all kinds of other natural phenomena.
Oh, yes, while you brought up volcanic activity, I'm not sure it's related. But there have been like 200 earthquakes. I was going to try and get a chart up on the website. I'm going to try and do that here shortly, showing the seismic, you know, map of what's going on right now. It's like constant, Whitley, 200 earthquakes between Nevada and California.
In the Sierra Nevada, yeah, absolutely correct. And it is, you know, it's right in the Mammoth Lake area, which is, of course, a volcanic area, and earthquake swarms are associated with volcanic activity. There's no evidence, at least they're not mentioning any evidence of volcanic activity in that area. But there have been instabilities like this emerging all over that part of the world, including, of course, in Yellowstone earlier this summer.
Well, what would cause 200 earthquakes? Just out of curiosity, I mean, could that
be a... it's a fault. There's a fault over there that's fairly active, and it in this particular case, why these would cluster like this all of a sudden, and there's a number of three or four or five pluses that are being felt by people, we'll just have to wait and see. It could just subside again.
That's what we have to do. Yeah, well, sure, but that's what we always have to do with Mother Nature is wait and see. And as he mentioned, they're not Republicans. They're not Democrats, this Mother Nature. She's completely without political persuasion whatsoever. She's just going to do what she's going to do. And we, human beings, have to wait and see. Well, now there is one other possibility, and we'll talk about that in a moment.
Line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. Good morning. Whitley Strieber is here, and he will logically be followed by Will Thomas tonight. And we're both going to talk a little bit about control of our weather, whether anybody actually is trying to control our weather, or are they controlling our weather? And if so, what kind of job are they doing? Controlling the weather is nothing new. Well, it is in a way, I guess. I read a story last week about a guy and his company that were going to try and put an absorbent material into Ivan and try and lessen the fury. And, of course, on the front page of our website right now, coasttocoastam.com, we've got Project Storm Fury. Project Storm Fury was an experimental program run by the U.S. government from 62 through 83, the project's goal to weaken hurricanes by seeding clouds in the eyewall of the storm with silver iodide. It was thought perhaps silver iodide would cause supercooled water in the storm to freeze, disrupting the inner structure of the hurricane in the mid-80s. Researchers discovered, however, that hurricanes, unfortunately, contained too little supercooled water for seeding to be effective. Now, that doesn't mean they've given up on trying to control the weather, Whitley.
Well, no, there still would like to do that. You know, the Caribbean nations protested that program.
Protested, really?
Oh yeah.
You're talking about this particular program.
Well, they protested the. I'm not sure if this was part of the same program, but the U.S. also had a program back then where they were seeding hurricanes. And they were seeding them to try to get them to produce rain and therefore to slow down the rotational energy of the hurricane because the clouds get heavier and they start to move slower when they begin to...
In other words, to exhaust them...
before they reach the United States.
Which is fine for us.
Well, it wasn't so fine in the Caribbean because some of these hurricanes dumped an awful lot of water on the islands and the U.S. agreed to stop this, although... Yeah. Given the situation that's going on right now, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they hadn't been out there anyway this past spate of storms, especially with Ivan. Not that it helped, but they may very well have been out there trying to do something during this period because of the urgent need to try to avoid. I mean, we're looking at plus well over $20 billion worth of damage from the storms that have hit this country.
No, I was going to say, when it's in the billions, surely somebody's going to be sitting there thinking about, well, can we do something about this? And so there was that effort. And, of course, the problem, Whitley, with a public effort to do something like this is that no matter what, you're going to get blamed for somebody's bad luck.
Well, yeah, you are. And I think that if island of Grenada were to discover that we'd been seeding that storm that hit them, they'd certainly go to the UN and protest. They have lost everything. Their tourist industry is finished. Every hotel on Grenada is either leveled or badly damaged. The nutmeg industry, which is their second big industry, is over. Virtually every nutmeg tree on the island is destroyed, and it takes 15 years to grow one of those trees. So they're basically, they're left with nothing. They have a couple of hospitals that have electricity, and the airport has electricity. That is it. The rest of the place is just in ruins with people wandering around in the dark.
That's a disaster, of course.
Yeah. Just a little while ago, to see the scale of this and the widespread nature of it, another river burst its banks. It burst basically a levee in Bangladesh and has stranded 825,000 people in that country in about 500 different villages. People are now living in waist-deep water because they have no place else to go.
It would seem that pouring chemicals into a hurricane, and I'm certainly not a scientist, but it would seem low-tech compared to, for example, what HAARP claims might be possible, using the technology, you know, firing immense amounts of RF at the ionosphere and concentrating it there, and then playing these weird tones, Whitley, that may, among other things, manipulate our weather. They have said themselves that could be one side effect or even one, perhaps, goal of HAARP. And I want to take 1 second out, Whitley, and do something that I promised the audience. And I'm not saying this is to affect the weather or people's mental states, and that's certainly been stated as one possibility as well, or anything else, because I don't know. But what I do know is that I've got audio from HAARP, and I'm about to play it. Now, I want to thank Steve Wingate, a member of our group, for recording this on request, but he is the one who recorded it. And what I'm about to play is going to be going out over hundreds and hundreds of AM radio stations with an immense total amount of power and FM stations, and all of it pouring directly toward the ionosphere. So with a little trepidation, what I'm about to play for you, two cuts, is in fact a transmission directly from HAARP. Here's the kind of thing they're bombarding our ionosphere with. Listen carefully. Is that weird or what? That's HAARP. That's aimed at our ionosphere to achieve what? Well, we're not exactly sure. That's one transmission from HAARP, and if that's not enough for you, here's another. Remember that HAARP is taking frequencies and, in essence, beating them against each other to achieve a resonance in the ionosphere for, what purpose? Here, once again, another mode of HAARP in action. Weird, weird stuff. That's HAARP, folks. Thought you might want to hear it. And again, my thanks to Steve Wingate for providing that. That's bizarre stuff.
That is so bizarre. Art, I have to ask you about this radio signal we were talking about off the air that's hams are picking up in the western United States that's in near Prescott, Arizona. It's the lead story on my website right now, and it's coming from the Earth. It's in other words, it's being generated by a transmitter in somewhere between Sedona and Prescott out in that area.
Do you know offhand, the first time I've heard any reference, and I've heard this signal on 40 meters, with the first time I've heard any reference as to its origin physically was in your story. Do you know how they narrowed it down to that area?
Yeah, the FCC used a direction finder and narrowed it down that way.
All right. The signal, for your information, apparently has a late word disappeared as strangely as it appeared. On or about 7238 kilohertz, 7.238 megahertz, there was this weird signal, and I've got a spectrum analyzer photograph of it here, Whitley, and it's far more complex than you would initially think. When you hear it, you tune across and you listen, you say, oh, garbage.
Yes.
But when you break this garbage down on an analyzer, it is at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 discrete carriers of information of some kind. It's a weird, weird signal, Whitley, and I wonder if it has, if it's related to the HARP activity.
I don't know, but the thing that's odd is it's coming from an area that is pretty isolated, and where there's no Air Force base, there's no real population areas. It's just out in the wilderness.
Hmm.
And some people think it's coming from more than one transmitter. My webmaster is going to be working on it tomorrow, I believe. He's got some ideas. He's got some specialized equipment, and he's going to be trying to take a look, more of a look at it.
Well, good luck. But late information I have doesn't mean it won't come back. But late information is it's gone, just like it appeared. Boom.
We have a recording of it, actually.
Oh, no kidding. All right.
Oh, yeah. In fact, if listeners want to listen to this recording, you can click on the Dreamland tab on unknowncountry.com, on the right-hand side of the homepage, masthead.
And hear it?
What will happen is the last four Dreamlands will come up, and at the very bottom there is a tab that says, and I am looking at it, Mystery Signal. Click on the click here to listen just below Mystery Signal, and you will hear me babbling about it for a few minutes, and then you will hear the signal itself.
All right. Well, many hams, including myself, raised hell about it. It didn't belong there, of course. It doesn't belong right in the middle of the ham band. Nobody knew what it was. It was mysterious, and apparently in the American Southwest it was heard all across the American West and, in fact, up into Western Canada.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do whatever we can with it and whatever more can be done with it. I mean, goodness knows, my suspicion is that it has been pretty darn thoroughly analyzed already by you guys.
When you look at it on an analyzer, you go, wow, this is not just some noisemaker. This is a very complex operation doing this for whatever reason.
Very strange, and it's a strange place for it to be coming from, too.
Do you think that HARP could be, I mean, it's one of the things it said they might do is control weather. Could that be a more downtown attempt to control the weather, I wonder, Whit?
I've often wondered when and if they would bring HARP antennas into the lower 48. There's no evidence of any kind of structure out there. Where this signal is coming from.
Well, they don't have to actually bring the antennas to the lower 48, Whitley, to have an effect on something in the lower 48. In fact, HARP can virtually reach out to any part of the world, and the signal would be heard all over the world, but the effects of it could be, I suppose, aimed right from where they are.
Well, exciting the very high atmosphere and the way that they're trying to do is going to have many effects, profound effects on what's going on down here. And I've always thought it was the kind of thing that the military, the kind of experimentation the military gets involved in without really being able to predict the results. And, you know, they do these so-called environmental impact studies on some of these classified programs that turn out to be 3 pages long, and you have to wonder, are there any other pages anywhere else? Basically, what they say about HAARP is that it will have no effect, but there's no indication at all of who did the study or how good it is. Or
well, one of the worrisome things about HAARP is that if you talk to people on the inside with regard to HAARP, they're not altogether sure what effect it will have. They freely they'll admit to you, we don't know. Here are the possibilities, but we don't know. I don't know if that's all they know. I suspect not. So all of this is very strange and interesting. And if they are controlling the weather, Whitley, then they're not controlling it well enough yet.
They're not doing a very good job. That's what I always say when people tell me, write me and say, well, HAARP is weather control. I say, whose weather? Not ours.
Yeah.
Because if they were controlling our weather, things would be a lot better. There wouldn't be guys sitting in Alabama now, right now, with their pickup trucks in their swimming pools.
Yeah, it's true. But I suppose, you know, at the beginning of any science, there are going to be some boo-boos. I mean, this is all pure speculation. But if they are trying, if they aren't trying, I'd be surprised. And if they are trying, then they don't have it perfected yet.
Right. But, absolutely not. You know, there's another thing going on, and let's get back to those earthquakes just for a minute.
200 earthquakes, California-Nevada border.
And, you know, the Mauna Loa volcano is becoming active, they say, and there is a volcano in Japan, Ashimayama, which is raining ash on Tokyo as literally as we speak.
Really?
They have ash warnings taking place there, and You know, you talk about the United States has had a pretty rough time. Japan's had 3 typhoons, 2 7-plus earthquakes, 2 5-plus earthquakes, and now they got a volcano going off. You know, you wonder what else could go wrong.
And you also wonder if all of this high strangeness, you know, isn't tied together.
That's why I brought it up again, because I think there's every reason to wonder that. We are told, it's drilled into us, it's not tied together. But, you know, the whole planet is tied together, and the whole planet is tied to the sun, to the rest of the solar system. Of course it's tied together. They say it's not tied together simply because they don't know how it is or how it could be. But it just seems like right now, just in these past few days, say the past 3 or 4 weeks, it's been an unusual time of a lot of different kinds of upset. Nothing, there have been some very major storms. Beyond that, there's been nothing that has been overwhelmingly noticeable. But you wonder if that won't happen next. I mean, if one of these volcanoes won't really blow, or what is happening up around Mammoth Lake will turn out to be the beginning of renewed volcanic activity.
Well, of course, a large volcanic event almost anywhere in the world, Woodley, could have a dramatic short term, and by that I mean a few years effect on the global temperature.
Oh, absolutely. Well, one thing it does, like when Mount Pinatubo blew, is it heats the stratosphere that is now getting cooled. It heats it up very nicely for a few years because it drives all of that heat retaining, all those heat retaining gases way up into the stratosphere, and the stratosphere itself warms up. So ironically, one of the side effects of a big volcanic eruption might be less violent weather for a few years.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
In other words, less heat transferred, and so less heat, less violence.
Right. In other words, the temperature differential between the stratosphere and the troposphere would be reduced, and that would mean less violent weather. But unless that happens, the weather is definitely, very definitely going to stay more violent, and we can see with the combination of this of more hurricane activity on a natural cycle with this situation, I mean, you're going to see some extremely intense storms. And
well, are we in for a serious ride over the next few years?
I always hate to. I would say it's more likely than not. More definitely, more likely than not. I think that the situation is such that if one thing going in our favor is that we are finally going off the solar max, And a lot of solar activity seems to result in a lot of weather on Earth.
It sure does.
Yeah, it definitely does. And the exact way that that is connected, we don't fully understand, but we do know it is connected. That at least we won't have to worry about probably for the next 5 or 6 years. But as far as the atmosphere itself is concerned and the changing ocean currents, I think that we are in the early parts of a sudden climate change situation, and I think we're going to probably be looking at a very different climate in 10 years. I think that during the next 10 years, we're likely to see some of the most violent weather that has ever been seen. We could even see situations develop where something like the superstorm happens. Like if we have really warm weather, air driving up into the Arctic in September or late August, September, you're going to see explosive winter storms developing in an October, November situation in the Northern Hemisphere.
All right, buddy. Your website is unknowncountry.com, right?
That's right.
And you also continue the great tradition of Dreamland that I believe is...
Absolutely. Dreamland is on every week. It's on the website. Linda Moulton Howe is with us also every week. You'll hear the same familiar old Dreamland theme music. Ray Lynch's O of Pleasure. I kept the show going, and it could very well be the largest radio program on the Internet. It's got 250,000 listeners a week.
That's huge on the Internet. Huge.
Huge. Yes. Huge. So,
people can tune in to Dreamland what time?
It's on. It starts at 3 o'clock on Friday, Pacific on Saturday afternoons, and each show is available for a month.
That's what I was going to ask. And so anytime they go up to the website, they can click in, listen to the last show or two or whatever.
Absolutely.
And it's a freebie, right?
It's a freebie. Yeah, and my wife, Ann, has a new show up there called Mysterious Powers. It's getting 40,000 listeners a week, which is sort of about all of our healing powers and kind of psychic powers and stuff. It's a really fun show. And plus, if you subscribe to the website, if you pay, I think it's $11.95 for 3 months or something, you get all kinds of additional interviews, plus the last 6 months of Dreamland. And it's all downloadable as well.
All right. Listen, thank you very much for being here, Whitley. As always, we'll see you again very soon.
Talk to you soon, brother.
Take care. All right, so there you have it. Hurricanes, earthquakes, odd weather, maybe a little bit of control of that weather. And by the way, while we're on the subject of control and the weather... Coming up next is one of the nation's great, I don't know, what is he? He's a great investigative journalist, really. Will Thomas and Chemtrails. I'm Art Bell.
When you subscribe to the... Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and I ask that you listen to the following with an open mind. William Thomas is an award-winning investigative journalist specializing in health, the environment, and military affairs. Honing his craft on the streets of Milwaukee, Chicago, and Woodstock during the 60s, William has reported for the Environmental News Service while serving as a member of a three-man environmental emergency response team during and immediately following the Gulf War. He later broke the chemtrails story worldwide. Matter of fact, he did that right here. William Thomas, award-winning writer and His photography have appeared in more than 50 publications in 8 separate countries with translations to French, Dutch, and Japanese. His 30-minute video documentary, Echo War, won the, or would that be Eco War, I guess, won the 1991 U.S. Environmental Festival Award for Best Documentary Short. And he's going to break a story here tonight, if you'll just stay right where you are. Four of the 5 Atlantic storms occurring thus far this year have become major tempests. That is unprecedented. But spraying hurricanes with chemicals from airplanes in hopes of sapping their strength is not. The award-winning reporter who first broke the story of chemtrails right here on Coast to Coast AM back in 98 is back tonight. This time with evidence that he says points to spray planes tampering with tropical storms off Florida's Atlantic coast. Was Hurricane Frances attacked by some cloud-seeding airplanes as it approached ominously Florida, the Panhandle, earlier this month? Stay right there, because here is Will Thomas. Will, welcome.
Thank you, Art. Pleasure to be back with you tonight and your listeners.
Good to have you. Something happened to our phone connection in between when I said it was great and now.
Oh, same phone, Art.
Okay. Well, we'll bear with it. It's got a little hum on it. All right, Will. That's the question. I mean, are we tampering with our weather?
Well, we certainly have been since the late 1940s. Not just the weather, but with particular emphasis on hurricanes, seeding hurricanes to take some of their strength away. And if that's possible to do artificially, we know that whenever it does occur, this can have some very, let's say, erratic results.
Is that what you think occurred in the case of Frances?
Now, I can't prove this. I have to emphasize I cannot prove this allegation, but we have very strong evidence that Frances was seeded with a known product that has, in previous tests off Palm Beach, washed ashore. This is a gel-like material. We'll get into that in the show tonight. And now we have 2 separate television stations down in Florida, reporters on Juneau and Pompano Beach reporting a gel material washing ashore ahead of Frances. The description that they gave and the videotape match earlier reports of a similar gel coming ashore after storm seeding attempts off that very same coast.
Now, could this gel be a natural product of the water being as disturbed as it obviously is in a hurricane?
Well, that is an obvious point. And both gentlemen, I've listened to these tapes, exclaimed over the unusual characteristic of this foam or gel because it did not blow away like spindrift before hurricane winds. It came ashore, the one reporter said, like a solid. It just simply did not act like any kind of spindrift, and we have no indication, for example, of a shipwreck or anything going down off that coast that would account for this material.
All right. Well, I did read a story, a wire service story, Will, about a man and his company who planned to try and seed one of these last hurricanes with an absorbent material that hopefully would, you know, absorb, I guess, a lot of the moisture that would be generating more violence otherwise and to calm it down that away. Had you heard that?
Oh, yes. You're referring, I think, to Peter Cordani.
That's right.
And his company, Dynomat.
That's right.
I've been reporting on that company for the chemtrails confirmed editions since he started up, and you're exactly right. He's on a mission to save humanity and the environment from hurricanes and typhoons, and as you said, he's developed this powder called DynoGel to absorb moisture. He's got a range of products that soak up oil spills from jets to automobiles.
All right. Well, could this have been DynoGel that was discovered on the beach?
Well, it certainly seems to me that's possible because we have an earlier report, as I mentioned, of this gel coming ashore. This would be in July 2001 when Dynomat made their first big splash by seeding a thunderstorm off West Palm Beach and wiping it out of the sky in front of observers and people manning radar scopes.
That's very impressive.
Very impressive, and we had a gel washing ashore at that time, reported by ABC News, and Erminia Kasani, you might remember her name on our shows, doing excellent work with low-level drops in the U.S., on Moonbo Media website, confirmed that that gel was positively identified as dinogel washing ashore on the very same locale as we have gel washing ashore in front of Francis.
All right, well, but, you know, the thunderstorm experiment, by your own words, would appear to be a success.
According to the supervisor of the local airport and the Weather 5 radar cameras downtown, absolutely a success. Excuse me, we have a cameraman in a chase plane. He said the cloud just vanished, and this wasn't a cloud. This was a full-on thunderstorm, and they wiped it out of the sky.
That is impressive, Will. I want to sidetrack for just a moment. You, of course, are most famous for your work, with this audience anyway, with regard to chemtrails, right?
Yes.
And I've got some rather sharp criticism, from Greg Gillis, and I want to read it to you because I want to get your reaction to it. Would that
Good.
Be all right?
Sure.
All right, here it comes. Greg says, I think I can answer his last question, and he was referring to Will Thomas's stating emphatically that chemtrails are chemtrails are not contrails. So, what exactly are chemtrails? And he says, I can answer that question, though I don't really need to. Chemtrails are contrails. Now, here's the really sad part. The statement starts by saying that, quote, it's easy to make fun of what we don't understand, end quote. Sadly, a whole lot of people do not understand a whole lot in this country. In that context, there's plenty of wiggle room for quacks and nutcases to make extraordinary claims without proper challenge or the application of critical thinking. Holy moly, I suppose B-17 bombers in World War II were dispensing chemtrails over Europe, too. Anyone with even a shred of scientific education or even common sense will show that when warm air is expelled at altitude, it creates a contrail. Sure, pressure, humidity, and altitude play a part in the creation of contrails, but to suggest that ordinary contrails are a result of military or anyone else seeding is not only stupid, it's insane. And he actually goes on, air travel is so common and used with such growing frequency that the number of aircraft in the sky is growing by the month, and that in itself, it could be the number, the increasing number of flights means more contrails. Is that in itself an issue? Yes, it might be. But I've seen studies indicating that the numbers of increasing contrails is changing weather patterns slightly. But are these chemical dispensing aircraft purposely seeding humanity with stuff? Not a chance. To continue that reasoning feeds what's called unwarranted paranoia. Anecdotally, with 15 years top secret clearance, 12 of them on flight lines, 24/7, I can assure people, one, airplanes will make contrails at varying altitudes. Two, military aircraft do fly silly, seemingly silly patterns at times, orbits. Three, air travel is increasing in frequency. Four, if the military were conducting chemtrail operations, it would be such a massive logistical program that it would stick out like a sore thumb in dozens of ways. And five, Dan Rather, despite his current problems, would have already been reporting it. Fact is, the notion of chemtrails is pure stupidity compounded by ignorance and paranoia. Now, I wrote back to him suggesting he shouldn't be so afraid to express his feelings, and I haven't heard back yet. But anyway, there you have it. Want to respond?
Oh, yes, that's excellent. I've been hearing that for many years, and we're talking 6 years of research now, and he obviously hasn't read my book, but I do appreciate the gentleman's comments because he basically sums up the main criticisms and arguments against chemtrails and my thesis and my work. So thanks for that. That's right on. Yes, I'm aware of the B-17 pictures, quite impressive, of the contrails woven over Germany in 1944, 45. Absolutely. Airplanes at high altitude cause contrails. We all know that. The question is why so many Americans have been going out of their homes and looking up at the sky, parking their cars by the side of the road, pointing cameras up at the sky and saying that is not what we've been seeing with airliners and normal contrails for all of our lives. There's something else going on. Now, as we've discussed on air, Art, tests done in New Mexico with Clifford Carnicom was the first to point this out, that temperature and humidity on heavy plume days, let's use that word, crisscross plumes, I went down there a couple times myself to Santa Fe and saw this, could not have been formed with the temperature and humidity because there was a third of the humidity in the sky necessary for these so-called contrails to form, and the temperature was far too warm. So, no, we don't have the atmospheric conditions. We've run similar examples out here on the West Coast, and we can say emphatically that oftentimes the temperature and humidity are far too less, less humidity and higher temperatures, far apart from the temperature and humidity needed to form contrails. And when I ran this by Canada's Department of Transport meteorologists, I got a thundering silence because this is, we're talking science here. But more than that, I mean, we can argue this forever. I tend to go with government authorities, and particularly the Federal Aviation Administration, and particularly the people that are operating the air traffic control radars. They see what's going on, and they have been telling us for years that they have been seeing military-identified tanker traffic crisscross the United States and on into Canada, leaving trails visible on radar, unlike contrails, which quickly dissipate, and that they have been told repeatedly by their superiors that this is a weather modification experiment, and then they were told this is a climate modification experiment. I'm talking radar people, air traffic controllers on the east coast of the United States, including the manager for the Northeastern Seaboard, and I'm talking air traffic controllers here in Canada in the city of Edmonton who actually went outside, Art, looked up at the sky and verified with a witness that the airplanes they were tracking, one was a Japan Airlines 747, no trail at all on radar or in the sky, and the others were two Air Force tankers tracked down from Alaska, circling Edmonton, emitting particulates that showed up on radar and showed up in the sky when they went out to check. So I think that's fairly convincing when we have radar operators confirming this on their scopes and confirming that they have been told that these are weather slash climate modification experiments.
Well, Will, the first time or the second time, and I think they were close together when we had you on, when the whole chemtrail thing blew up like a terrorist bomb, and it really did blow up, shortly after having you on, I live here in the desert. You know where I am? I'm not far from Death Valley. It's really dry here, despite the fact that a hurricane's coming at us right now. Ha! Unheard of. Or more or less toward us. It probably will dissipate by the time it gets here, but if you could see the track, it'd blow your mind out across the Arizona desert. Anyway, it's dry here, is my point. Single-digit dry. Really dry, William. And shortly after the first show, my wife and I observed aircraft in our area, leaving what appeared to be, at first glance, contrails, but the fact is they turned into, they kind of became a darker, murkier color, and then they expanded, and by the time the day was over, here in the dry digit, single-digit dry desert, we had an kind of a weird overcast, and I thought, well, what would be the point in any weather modification where I live? But then I thought, you know, it's interesting, the weather here today is the weather in the Midwest about 2 days later. or 2 or 3 days later, it moves, most weather, from west to east. And so I guess if you were going to try the genesis of something, you might do it, well, above me, for example. What do you think?
I think so, and I think that your extremely dry air there makes a compelling case for chemical trails, rather than frozen water vapor at altitude. Your critic that you read out over the air also mentioned, I hear this often, increased airline flights, that's true, would give us increased contrails that people are mistakenly reported as chemtrails.
Yes.
Two quick points here. One, what airline in the world flies 8, 10, 20 jets crisscrossing back and forth, violating all kinds of flight rules, by the way, over areas that don't see this kind of traffic, away from navigation beacons, and then vanish for weeks, and then they come back and repeat this? That's not any kind of schedule I would adhere to in an airline.
William, there are more flights. Did you?
Yes.
I posted on the website just, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, a very now, I think, quite famous picture of the American Southeast taken by satellite.
Yes.
Showing zillions of contrails or whatever they were, but more than I've ever seen over any geographic area in my whole life, crisscrossing the American Southeast. Did you see that satellite photo?
No, I've seen similar photos, Art, over France and Germany and Europe. And I'm very hesitant to label them one way or the other. I'm not an expert, but I've seen similar satellite photographs, yes.
Well, they absolutely were long-lasting somethings that had come from airplanes. I'm not saying chemtrails, and it may be that just contrails themselves are, to some degree, altering our weather. Even if you take the chem part of it out and just look at contrails, there are so many of them now that isn't it possible it would affect our weather?
It's more than possible. It's scientifically proven, and these studies go back about 10 years. There is increasing concern that contrails significantly influence global warming and are heating up the planet.
Uh-huh.
Contrails themselves are really bad news. They're not harmless, as we're told. They're a significant factor also in changing regional weather and have greatly decreased the amount of sunlight reaching the United States under frequently flown flight corridors. And yes, those can be long-lived when you have enough air traffic on a single route over the North Atlantic, for example, or over the United States. But those aren't contrails causing those artificial clouds. Those are particulates coming out of the exhaust that the nuclei in the atmosphere clump around, and they form artificial cirrus clouds. These are not condensation trails. These are actual clouds formed by the dirty exhaust from all these aircraft. But listen to this, Art. This is very interesting. In 2001 and 2, NASA did a study on this phenomena, on contrails, over the Pacific Northwest. And we're talking one of the highest locations of contrails in the United States. And they reported contrail activity was decreasing. At the same time, we were getting reports from Portland and Seattle of these long-lasting multiple plumes over their cities.
Uh-huh.
So we have a government body saying those aren't contrails. At the same time, we have eyewitnesses complaining about these sky trails.
All right. Well, so we've already said absolutely contrails alone, forget the chem part of it, can have an effect on our weather. So that's worth considering. But then if you intentionally inject something into this jet exhaust, or you just put spray things on a plane and actually intentionally induce chemicals, then who knows? It might have an effect on our health. It might have an effect on the weather. It might have an effect on a lot of things. And you've been doing this now for quite some time, William. Can you prove conclusively with chemical tests now at this point that what you're saying is true?
Yes.
A yes was good. A yes will do. And we will pursue the yes in a moment. After all, a good, hard scientific proof, there's just nothing like it, is there? So keep your ears and your mind open as we explore chemtrails with William Thomas. I'm Art Bell.
Would you pay 15 cents to hear this show in its entirety? That's the daily charge for Streamlink. Sign up at www.coasttocoastam.com. Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. You know, I don't know about you, but if I was in government, very high place, position in government, vice president, president, in charge of something or another that related, watching these hurricanes storm ashore with $20 billion in damage, I'd sure as hell turn to my top scientists and I'd ask them if there's anything we could do about it. And then if I got a reasonable answer, I might proceed. How about you? Hey! In the years since I had Will Thomas on, inevitably when I'm interviewed by anybody, they always ask me, hey, what about chemtrails? Along with everything else they ask me, they always say, what do you think about chemtrails? And I always say, well, I don't know. And, you know, that's kind of still my position. But, you know, I have an absolutely open mind. And if you can prove to me that the chemical soup in this stuff is man-made, then fine. I'm willing to believe, William. What do we know chemically about what's being sprayed?
We have two very good independent lab tests taken some years apart. Let's go quickly back to Espanola, Ontario, a little town in central Ontario, summer of 99. Residents complaining of what they called spray planes. They call them U.S. Air Force planes going back and forth, spraying something in the sky they said was making people, particularly children, sick over a 50-square-mile area. Now, no one had heard of Will Thomas. No one had heard of chemtrails. These people came forward. They made such a fuss, Art, that finally the Ministry of Environment, the provincial ministry, was called in, kicking and screaming, and they did tests. There was a town meeting, and they refused to release their test, their air test results. There was a near riot.
What?
Reported by the CBC.
No, wait. Stop right there. They refused to, in other words, they had a town meeting to reveal, apparently,
right,
the test results, and then they refused to do it at the town meeting, citing what?
Citing everything is fine, go back to sleep, no problems, but they would not release the actual data.
Citing what?
Citing, trust us, everything's fine. Well, the local people did not trust them. Everything was not fine. It made national press.
Yes.
And so an individual in the town collected some of the fallout. We're talking chemtrail fallout,
right,
through rain samples. And he took them to an independent lab and had them analyzed and sent me the test report. and the lab test report showed levels of aluminum 7 times higher than the provincial permissible safety limits. This was a town away from industrial areas.
Is there a way this could have occurred naturally?
No way that we can find naturally. This was an anomalous spike without an industrial source. But that's one test. Okay, it doesn't make proof, but it's one.
And, well, I was going to say, right, not proof.
No, but it's pretty strong. We have 7 times provincial safety limits of a material, aluminum. And also, by the way, this lab found even higher levels of quartz particulates. We're talking microscopic now, quartz. Highly reflective quartz. And quartz. No one could understand where that might have come from. You have
highly
to ask yourself.
Reflective quartz. So what would be the theory there? Perhaps reflecting sunlight or reflecting something?
Well, that's exactly right. We have the Hughes patent in the early 90s, the actual blueprint for the reduction of global warming by spreading sunlight reflectant materials in the upper atmosphere. They were talking about aluminum, actually aluminum oxide.
Right.
And, of course, quartz is also highly reflective. So it matched our criteria for the patent.
All right.
All right. Now we jump ahead to November 2002, and I get a call from Edmonton, Alberta, from a Dave Dickey. Now, this is a landscape man. He's been doing this for many years. He works for the city of Edmonton doing landscape, and he noticed plants and trees getting sick and dying. And so they did some tests of the soil, and they found the electrical conductivity was off the upper limits of the scale.
Huh.
I think it was 4.6 instead of 1. And he thought, gee, I wonder if these airplanes we see going back and forth spraying or at least emitting something had something to do with the electrical conductivity in the soil. So he took some samples of snow falling through these trails that he was seeing. He took them to Norwest Labs, and I have a copy of report 336566, November 14, 2002. And guess what? They found unaccountably elevated levels of aluminum and barium. Well, what does this mean, elevated? It means it's off the provincial charts. They had never seen levels this high.
Okay.
Barium, of course, was identified along with the aluminum by 2 scientists at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base speaking to award-winning reporter Bob Fitrakis about their work on 2 projects for the U.S. Air Force, one involving aluminum oxide seating and the other barium, spraying barium antennas, they called it, in the sky to bounce radio and radar waves over the horizon. Barium, by the way, is more reflective than glass in terms of reflecting sunlight or radio beams. So we have 2 scientists at Wright-Patterson confirming the Air Force project in print. We have the aluminum and barium identified as belonging to these Air Force projects in our lab samples from Edmonton, and the aluminum part at least confirmed in Espanola, Ontario. It doesn't get much better than that, I don't think.
You think that's absolute proof then that somebody is absolutely injecting materials in what? Jet fuel or spraying them through with external tanks or what?
The patent called for it to be put into jet fuel. In fact, using airliners to do this, you just switch to your main tank at altitude and then emit these 10 micron particles. Now, a human hair is 100 microns across, so these are absolutely microscopic.
Sure.
They said the airlines might not go for it, and they said people on the ground might get upset over the visual whitening of the sky, which is exactly what so many people have been seeing here in North America since 98.
Well, again, the fellow who wrote the little critical bit that I read, suggested that if what you say is going on, it would be so logistically a nightmare that it would stick out like a sore thumb. How do you answer that?
Well, I answer it by saying the United States Air Force has 700, they admit to 700 tanker planes. They fly all the time.
No, but I mean the gathering of the materials, the dispensing, the loading, the, you know, the whole logistical nightmare associated with a project of that magnitude.
Yes, I take his point. I guess my counterpoint is the airplanes are fueled. The trucks roll onto the apron and fuel. You don't have to tell everybody what's in the trucks that you put into the airplanes.
That's true, but
it's a major project. Aluminum oxide, I'm told by scientists, is about as common and ubiquitous as sand. It's a pretty easy material to come by.
Well, okay, that's true, but there would be a point, a place at which, at some factory, where they would have to introduce this safely to the fuel, right?
I imagine so, yes. That and the barium, when they use the barium.
So do you think logistically they could get away with that?
Well, I've covered similar big stories. That's my, I guess my only answer is I wrote a book on the Gulf War syndrome, and they got away with that for 10 years.
Yeah, that's a good
injecting
point.
Injecting people with things that made them very ill indeed. We have top-secret experimentation. We have HAARP in Alaska, as you well know.
Oh.
Atomic experiments. I mean, it goes on. So the arc, I mean, this could be a close-hold project that people aren't informed about. We've seen it again and again in the U.S. military.
Do you believe that some of these?
You simply don't know.
Do you believe that some of these things being sprayed, Will, are perhaps related to HAARP? Do you think that there is been a suggestion that HAARP, with what it bounces off the ionosphere, might interact with some of these particles being sprayed from planes? Do you think that might be? It could be something to that, weather control connected.
I called Bernard Eastland in Texas and caught him at his backyard barbecue. And, of course, he's the man who invented HAARP.
Yes.
And I said, what about this? We have this material. Is it possible? And we have this cobweb material, I said, that's coming down. But it doesn't act like cobwebs. It's 40, 60 feet long, drapes over power lines, airports, police cruisers. What is this stuff? Could this be a polymer? And if so, could that be related to HAARP? And he told me, interesting you mentioned that, because there's a company in Ohio, that's where Wright-Patterson is, as we mentioned, and that produces a polymer that can be tuned to the RF or the radio frequency of HAARP. He said, I don't know if that's the case, but it's certainly possible. I said, well, why did you invent this thing, this HAARP, in the first place? He said, for weather modification. That was our primary goal.
Have you ever heard HAARP?
Oh, yes, I heard it during I heard the woodpecker, the Soviet version.
No. I'm talking about the Alaskan HAARP setup. You've never heard that. Listen carefully. This was recorded within the last week. This is HAARP. These are giant antennas, acres of antennas in Alaska, producing a signal like the one you're hearing right now, called HAARP. That's one transmission. Here again is another. You're hearing HAARP from Alaska as recorded within the last week. There you got it. Well, that's HAARP. That's two examples of HAARP in the last week.
That's fantastic. I will say that the two scientists interviewed at Columbus Alive did confirm that HAARP was involved with one of their projects. They didn't use the word chemtrails, but that's what they were referring to, the two separate Air Force projects. They said HAARP was involved. As you noted, HAARP is involved with the ionosphere, but it goes right through the lower atmosphere unless, and Bernard Eastland confirmed this in our conversation, unless you put some kind of reflective material or matrix in the atmosphere, and then you can bounce HAARP off of that and heat the atmosphere and mess with the weather and local conditions that way.
Man, that seems awfully open of him in a kind of a casual conversation with somebody named Will Thomas, who's known to talk about this sort of thing publicly. Weren't you surprised that he would reveal that?
Not really. He hadn't heard of me, and he was very proud of his invention, Art.
Oh.
And he liked to talk about it. He was very, very proud of it. And, of course, he emphasized, and I must emphasize as well, he didn't know this thing. He just said, yes, this is all very possible. We built it to do these things, and I'm very proud of what we've accomplished. And if you go to his website now, you'll see a menu of future projects with all kinds of tampering on the menu as they increase, and by the way, ramp up the power of HAARP to, they're heading toward 1 billion watts of power.
I know.
Holy
I know.
Smokes.
I know. I said it at the beginning of this segment when I came in, Will. If I was, you know, the vice president or the president or in charge of something very important at a governmental level, and I saw three hurricanes come sailing in and cause about $20 billion damage, I'm sure I would turn to the best scientists I have, and I'd ask them, look, where are we? Where is the frontier? What can we do? Is there anything we can do to prevent these catastrophic storms from landing on the U.S. mainland, or can we lessen them before they get here? What are our options? If they're not doing that high up in government with all the modern technology we live with today, then they're derelict in their duty.
In fact, that's already happened. President Eisenhower, after six killer hurricanes hit the East Coast, you might remember 1954-55, I think there were something like 400 deaths, billions of dollars in damages. Eisenhower did get on the horn and say, let's get going. We have to do something, deal with these hurricanes. And then we saw an outgrowth of that. The military got very involved with hurricane modification. The Navy Weapons Center in 1960 came up with cloud seeding dispensers. And then we have, we have Operation Storm Fury coming out of that presidential request.
Well, Will, so you and I then really both understand that. I think any reasonable person would understand that and probably agree with it. But one question the common citizen would have across your nation, Canada, and here in the U.S., logically would be, well, okay, they're trying to do something, probably have good cause for what they're good intentions for what they're doing, we hope. But is any of this making people sick? That would be the concern of the people here on the ground.
Well, that's one concern. I guess their answer would be no, it's not. We're not talking the chemtrails that we've been speaking about.
What's your answer?
We're talking about spraying hurricanes over open ocean waters.
Yes.
Where presumably you're not going to make people sick. We can't say the same for the creatures down below. The bigger problem, Art, is that you might unbalance some very big circulatory systems in ways we cannot foresee. Now, Dynamat insists, when I called them, they said there's no downside to this. But in fact, my thought is, and I'm an ocean sailor, if you manage to take the energy out of the biggest energy system on the planet, it doesn't go away. It has to go somewhere else. So what in the world are we going to cause if we start trying to and accomplishing snuffing hurricanes?
Well, maybe nothing good. Will, hurricanes are the biggest heat exchangers the world has. That's what they do, is exchange heat. And if we didn't have them, then presumably something else would happen not good. They're sort of a part of the ecosystem on Earth. They perform a function, even though sometimes for us it's catastrophic. They do perform a function for Earth, right?
Very right. They're air conditioners, Art, actually. They pull cold air from the poles down to the tropics. So you turn off the air conditioners, and we're going to heat up the tropics, and we're going to have even bigger superstorms, some scientists feel.
All right. So is this the case that you presented to Dino Gel people as one perhaps unintended side effect, if they are successful?
Actually, I said this some years ago, on air, and they contacted me by email.
Really?
Said basically, you know, we don't appreciate that. We don't agree with you. And I said, that's fair game, but we're messing with a chaotic system. A hurricane is a chaotic system. And we know from chaos theory that if we change any of the, initial conditions, even very slightly, we can have very wildly varying unpredictable effects. And scientists are saying if you seed hurricanes and change the hurricane's intensity, it will change course. It will wobble off its predicted course, and it could smack into some place where you don't intend it to go.
Well, again, I'm in sympathy with the idea of preventing these catastrophes. And the other day I idly thought on the air, I think it was last weekend sometime or another, maybe even though the hurricane has to keep going, maybe we could create a way to have them go around in circles out there or, you know, erratically take off up into the middle of the Atlantic instead of hitting Florida. They'd still presumably perform their function without producing the catastrophe on land that they do. And that was sort of an idle thought. But, I mean, I'm not against the concept of trying to stop these catastrophes if we can do it without creating a bigger one.
Oh, absolutely. And, in fact, I had the same thought the other day. Hurricanes are guided by so-called steering winds. We don't know much about how they work, but we know that a hurricane is like a piece of wood in a river current, and it goes where these steering currents guide it. If we could guide the steering currents, presumably we could help these things do what they want to do, which is to recurve back to the northwest out into open, colder water where they run out of heat energy and dissipate, as you say, after doing their thing. Again, we don't know about unintended side effects, but I think no one's going to argue against saving life and property, and maybe, just maybe, that's a way to do it. Turning these things off completely sounds like a very bad idea.
All right, William, hold on. William Thomas is my guest. Subject, chemtrails, the seeding of hurricanes, and I guess maybe sort of a general discussion, don't you know, about what man ought and ought not be doing with regard to the weather. It seems like we can do so little, and yet behind the scenes they may be doing so much. Who knows? That's what we're talking about.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
In order to understand a little more about whether all this really could be going on or whether it's simple fantasy, is to ask yourself the question, if you were a high government official virtually ruling the country that ran the world, that would be us. Well, at least partially run the world, certainly, and you saw all these catastrophes occurring. You looked at the North Pole and saw it was melting, saw the South calving away, and you saw the hurricanes getting bigger and fiercer and more damaging, and weather all the deserts encroaching on towns. You saw all this happening in our environment, and you had the power. Wouldn't you turn to your scientists? Incidentally, should you wish to connect with me for some important reason, it's eminently possible. I would be Art Bell, A-R-T-B-E-L-L, at mindspring.com, or, alternately, artbell@aol.com. That would be how you could... Oh, you could also go to my website, or no, incorrect, the website, coasttocoastam.com, and go to Fast Blast, and then dispatch me off a quick message, which, with some luck, will appear on my computer, as many have now, reference what we're talking about at the moment with Will Thomas. Jeremy Willett in Greensboro, North Carolina, asks, have your guest explain just how it is that chemtrail chemicals could possibly be introduced into jet fuel when the combustion chamber of a typical jet engine reaches more than 1,100 degrees Fahrenheit. Most particulate matter would simply be vaporized at any such temp.
Good question, Art. I asked a former engineer for Alcoa Aluminum that question, and further I said, this sounds highly abrasive, aluminum oxide. Wouldn't that destroy the turbine blades in a jet engine? And his answer to both was, no, it would survive the temperatures. And he said at that size, you know, a tenth of the diameter of a human hair or smaller, he said, quote, it would polish the blades, but it wouldn't destroy the engine. He also said, without my prompting, it would leave a brilliant white plume in the sky.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about, I mean, the same question for you. If you were, again, in some type of high government position, you would almost surely turn to your top science people and say, is there something we can do? So I just can't imagine that we're not doing something. Certainly the Russians have made some noise about it. What do you know about the Russians, Will? They don't operate under quite the same strict constraints that perhaps we do.
I know this about the Russians, Art. I was offshore in my 31-foot boat off Conception in 1978, make that 79, January, and we were hit by a full-on hurricane. I have a picture of this storm that nearly killed us, and we were listening on our shortwave receiver to the woodpeckers chirp, 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 and at that time, the Soviets had put seven harp-like transmitters arrayed around a town you may have heard of called Chernobyl.
Yes.
They were messing with the jet stream, trying to get a decent harvest from their farms because they had miserable weather. And they succeeded, and Alaska had a tremendously warm winter that winter. And as I said, they appear to have triggered, not prevented, but triggered this unusual hurricane that nearly killed us. So that's what I know about the Russians and playing around with the jet stream.
Or if you take it, as I said, up another level, Will, and you look at the North Pole melting so quickly, we're going to have to learn to navigate the new ocean up there very soon.
Yes.
South calving off, glaciers melting and disappearing. That was the World News Tonight story the other night. ABC World News Tonight about the glaciers disappearing in China, actually all over the world.
Yes.
Will, you'd look to try to do something about all of this, maybe not just the localized weather, but the entire environment.
Absolutely. The late Edward Teller stood up at an international emergency seminar on these matters in 98 and said, let's spray a sunscreen. Let's do the quick fix. People aren't going to park their cars, obviously, so we'll spray these chemicals, reflect 1% of sunlight. He said, don't worry, we've run the computer simulations at Lawrence Livermore, and it says it will actually work. If we spray 10 million tons of this stuff, we'll have no net warming as we double CO2 by the year 2050. This is the man who gave us the H-bomb and the plan to carve new harbors out of the American coastline using atom bombs. Okay, so, there's been a concerted rush to do something about this, and primarily financial, not environmental, because your biggest environmental lobby on the planet is not Greenpeace, of course. It's the insurance companies and the reinsurance companies that insure them.
Yes, I've heard the insurance companies in Florida were quickly reinsuring prior to these hurricanes, getting very concerned. I mean, this has been catastrophic in terms of insurance, to be sure. $20 billion is a bunch of money. Now, there's one other sort of darker aspect to this whole weather control modification bit, and I guess it's got to be considered. We've been considering the possible, you know, benevolent uses of it. Well, it may not all be benevolent. Certainly, the weather could be a weapon as well. You could do mind-boggling damage to a country or a region with the not-so-benevolent control of weather. So it would be a, what I'm saying is it could be a weapon.
Well, the Russians certainly think so. Pravda, I'm looking at Pravda, January 15th, 03. Nothing goes out in Pravda without the government's okay. And they condemned HAARP. They said HAARP endangers the world. They said HAARP is causing earthquakes in our country, killing people. HAARP is, they alleged, connected with our incomprehensible apathy of our entire population. So they were very unhappy with HAARP as a weapon. We saw, what is it, Art 75, Operation Popeye, Vietnam. Let's spray the Ho Chi Minh Trail and wash away this main supply route.
Oh, yes.
That didn't work, but it, when that story was exposed, it ended up in the ENMOD Treaty, passed unanimously in the UN. The U.S. signed it. The Soviets signed it.
But it shows that we're not afraid to try things like that.
Oh, not at all. If we have the science, we're gonna, and the technology, we're gonna do it to, quote, see what will happen.
Well, you're an investigative reporter, Will. Is there any way that you think you can breach whatever security might exist around attempts right now to modify weather, either as a weapon or as something to help the country out? How do you go after a story like that?
Boy, no, I can't breach top secret, but I can diligently research, and I have other people helping me on this, and I look to what is published, and there's plenty there. We're looking at this Vision 2020, U.S. military project to control the Earth, atmosphere, oceans, subsurface, subterrane. And isn't it interesting that after Dennis Kucinich, this is for our critic earlier, Art, Ohio Representative Kucinich introduced H.R. 2977, House Resolution 2977, October 2001, to ban space weapons, including chemtrails. They went back to him, Columbus Alive, and said, why in the world are you introducing a bill to ban chemtrails when the Air Force calls this a hoax? And he replied, he said, the truth is, because he served on the committee overseeing the project, there's an entire program in the Department of Defense, Vision for 2020, doing this, doing chemtrails, and doing similar projects. And of course, he had to back down under intense fire, and that bill was rewritten as H.R. 3616 without chemtrails.
So it got pulled out. Do you know the mechanism, how that got pulled out, where the pressure came from?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
According to Columbus Alive, he couldn't get the Union of Concerned Scientists or Federation of American Scientists, those two bodies, on board. And apparently it was because it would break their rice bowl that some of them were involved in these projects and didn't want to see them canceled. And he came under a firestorm and had to back off from that. But he did reveal this government project. If you type in a Vision for 2020 or Vision 2020,
yes,
you should find some interesting documentations. Also type in owning the weather in Google, and you'll see the U.S. military has been involved in trying to own the weather for some year.
Yes, the U.S. military. Not NOAA, mind you, folks, but, you know, it'd be all right, I suppose, if NOAA owned the weather. I'd be more comfortable with that than the military owning the weather. That's a kind of a bold statement to make for the military, isn't it?
It's a very frightening statement. First, we don't know how to, quote, control this, what the unintended effects would be of trying to weaponize huge geophysical weapons like HAARP, like chemtrails, like hurricane seeding as weapons, creating earthquakes. This has resonance. This has consequences. And when you mess with chaotic systems, you cannot foresee what they will be. So this makes me very nervous.
Well, even though I'm sure they've considered it as a weapon, even if you just consider the, you know, the potential benign things they're trying to do, prevent hurricanes from striking land, big bad ones, lessening them, whatever, there's still a calculated risk in what they're doing. And I assume that with the DynoGel people, DynoMat,
yes.
You had a conversation along these lines, I'm sure, didn't you? About unintended consequences. How did they feel?
Oh, no downside risk, no problem. The benefits of saving tens of billions of dollars in damages and hundreds of lives outweigh any risk. This I'm getting from their own sources, their own published sources. What I asked in particular was to the President, Peter Cardani, just a few days ago, do you have U.S. government and or military involvement in your company? And his answer was no. We would like government involvement. We would like the funding to ramp up our projects,
sure,
but we don't have it. So I said, thank you. And after we concluded our interview and I was hanging up, I said, oh, just one quick question. I have a press report here, Associated Press, saying in October 2001, the U.S. Air Force was involved in seeding tropical storms off the Florida coast using your product. It says 9 Air Force planes, 330,000-pound payload. That would be a KC-10 tanker, though they didn't
really
say that.
Really?
And he made no reply.
Really?
Yeah.
You sure you hadn't left the line already?
Well, I was taking notes, and I was listening for that answer. Now, my research and I cannot find that AP press story to confirm the 9 planes and the poundage. I have the story. I can't go to source. However, when I asked him about the October 2001 military test,
yes,
busting a tropical storm,
right,
the same coast we've seen the gel washing up repeatedly, silence ensued.
Uh-huh. Is this all then, at this point, you're convinced that answer was straightforward, it's private money doing this?
I'm not sure of your question. I think it would take the U.S. Air Force. NOAA, by the way, ran these computer simulations. He sent them a jar of his product. They got excited. They checked it out.
Let me clarify my question. You're
please,
convinced that it's private money at this point, or you're convinced that it's military money?
I'm open. I don't have evidence, but I'm convinced that the military has been. I can document their interest going back to 1947. I can document, in my book, Chemtrails Confirmed, their continuing and intensified interest in weather and storm modification in the years 2000 to date. It seems to me, as you've been saying tonight, almost silly to suggest that they would not be interested,
indeed,
very interested, in what DynoMat is doing in Florida.
All right, DynoMat or others, is it your view that Charlie or Francis or Ivan were tampered with?
Again, it's very possible that Francis was seeded with this gel because we have two independent reports of something very unusual in terms of gel washing up on those West Palm Beach, Floridas. All three hurricanes you mentioned acted very unpredictably, which, of course, is the golden rule of hurricanes. They don't do what we think they're going to do, but these were very strange. And I kept getting calls from a friend out in California who was monitoring three televisions and taping everything. Rich Valleys in Santa Cruz kept saying, look at this. And I did have a look last night, Art, and the eye wall of Ivan, as you recall, as it closed the coast there, the Gulf Coast, basically disintegrated. It certainly caught the attention of of CNN. And that southwestern quadrant got very jaggedy and ragged. And guess what? Lo and behold, New Orleans was spared being buried under 18 feet of water on Bourbon Street.
Well, you're absolutely correct about that. I mean, unaccountably, Ivan had been, except for a couple of weakenings, just one of the more ferocious Category 5 storms. Several times along its path, it became Category 5. I watched every minute of it almost. And for it to disintegrate in the manner it did, in the southern portion that was still over water, just as it hit land, was amazing.
It was there was a driveway, as my friend Rich explained, and as I saw with my own eyes, this big wide lane into the eye. Now, let's be fair. The meteorologists will say, oh, yeah, well, these things pulled dry air off the coastline as they approach land. And we heard for the very first time in our lives this dry zone term of dry air. Well, it seems to be in a counterclockwise rotating storm. You're pulling dry air off a coast, you're going to pull it into the northwest quadrant. This driveway was in the southwest quadrant over open ocean. It was quite striking. It doesn't prove anything, but observationally, it even caught the attention of meteorologists. And, of course, going back to Francis quickly, as we saw as it approached land, the eye opened up to 70 nautical miles instead of 20 to 30, and every meteorologist on air was exclaiming over that, saying they'd never seen anything like
that before. I know. I also noted everything you're saying about the peculiar way some of these hurricanes performed, and I know a lot of the audience followed this very closely and will verify in their own minds that all of this, in fact, did occur. A couple of the hurricanes took really strange jogs, too, avoiding certain islands,
yes.
Just unaccountable strange jogs. So it was kind of interesting watching, and I had my mind on all of this as I watched, William, and thought about it. And thought, well, are we seeing evidence of tampering? And if so, maybe it did do some good, or maybe it caused one of them to turn the wrong way at the wrong time and intensify at the wrong time. I don't know.
Well, we don't know, Art, but we do know that Francis slowed down. It did lose some steam in wind strength and forward speed, but that caused more damage because Francis slowed down to 5 miles an hour, as you know, and sat over Florida for 13 hours. And flooded the place after knocking it sideways with its winds. So, you know, my friend Rich kept calling me, and I said, come on, you know, I just don't know about this. And jokingly, Art, I said to him, if you find me a news clip of gel washing ashore, I'll go with this story. And by goodness, he called me back and said, I have not one, but two clips of gel washing ashore. And at that point,
so that's what put you onto this, huh?
Yeah, he put me onto it. It took some doing. I was very skeptical, even though I've done the research in storm modification. I said, you've got to find the smoking gun. Find me the gel. And I was floored when he came up with these clips.
Well,
we're talking WFOR-TV, by the way,
oh,
down there in West Palm Beach, and CBS affiliate.
The CBS affiliate in Palm Beach?
Pompano Beach.
Pompano Beach. All right.
Yep.
Well, between chemtrails and now looking into the possible manipulation of hurricanes, you're almost typecast, aren't you, as an investigative reporter. It looks like the rest of your career is going to be looking into this kind of thing, doesn't it?
Oh, dear, I hope not, but I think you're right. And typecast is one word, Art. I would use the word radioactive. It's very hard to get published in the mainstream media now. They don't want to go near stories like this.
Well, right, and I don't know that I blame them. At any rate, hold tight. I want to go to the phones when we get back and begin to let the audience, either by fast blast or telephone, ask you questions, Will, all right?
Good.
All right, then, that's coming up here in a moment. There are so many questions about all of this, from HAARP to the possible manipulation of hurricanes to the chemtrail story that we've now been following for years. All of it open ground. If you have questions for Will Thomas, you know the doors to walk through. From the high desert in the middle of the night, which is exactly where we do business, this is Coast to Coast AM. Love you, baby. The U.S. Air Force loved you, and they're here to make sure it's a sunny day every day.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Be absolutely sure before the night is over, you check out make sure you check out my webcam photo up there and take a look at that storm track for Hurricane, the hurricane that's going to come roaring through Javier, come roaring through Arizona, come roaring through the American Great Desert and get us. Well, not really, but it's aimed at us. Good morning, wherever you are. I'm Art Bell. I'm in discussion with William Thomas about, chemtrails and the possibility of mass attempts at weather modification, some of which, if you looked at what went on with these hurricanes, you might believe perhaps occurred. It's a fascinating subject. For most of our lives, we've all thought there's just not a darn thing you can do about the weather. Well, maybe there is. Will, welcome back. Let's go to some phones and see what's out there. On my international line, you are on the air. Where are you calling from, please?
Yes, Art, calling from Hong Kong.
Hong Kong. Wow. That's a good first caller. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, and it's a joy to be able to talk with you. I have more than a passing interest in the topic tonight. I've really enjoyed the discussion. I've had meteorology as a hobby since I was a kid. And I'm just wondering the idea of tinkering with these huge weather systems seems fascinating to discuss, but I wonder if we're not ignoring some more practical things we can do. Here in Hong Kong, for example, most all of the buildings now are reinforced steel and concrete, and when typhoons come roaring through here, not much happens. It's just been amazing to me to watch the video from the U.S. Back home and see how much damage has been done, mostly because of the housing codes and lack of preparedness to sustain the kinds of damage that these big storms can do.
Well, it's a kind of a different sort of a question, but sure, why not? Let's ask. He says that not much happens in Hong Kong because of the nature of their building. That's strange, because when I was in Hong Kong, I saw massive construction with bamboo. But that issue aside, he says they're well-built and they withstand the typhoons that come roaring through. And he certainly makes a good point about the damage that occurs to us. And then, of course, down in the Caribbean, where construction practices are perhaps not quite what they are here on the mainland. William? William? William Thomas? Oh, well, it looks like William is not on the line. Okay, that's easy enough. We dial him. Oh, well, this is live talk radio, folks, and that kind of thing occurs. So we just put up with it, and phone company occasionally does this, and there's simply nothing we can do about it except what I'm doing right now. And that's redialing William. So let's see if we can get him back on the line here. William, are you there?
Yeah, hello.
Hi, William. I have no idea how that occurred or what occurred, but, I guess you probably did not hear the question. It was a caller from Hong Kong, and he was saying that the buildings in Hong Kong are constructed very well, withstand typhoons on a quite, regular basis and do so with very little damage, whereas through the Caribbean and the U.S., even the U.S., which is thought to be pretty well built, we suffer enormous amounts of damage. Any thoughts on that?
I've lived in Hong Kong, and I rode out more than one typhoon in Hong Kong. And, boy, I don't know. Typhoons are much bigger storms in area. They're extremely violent. They're hurricanes on amphetamines, really. So
They are. They have much more time to build going out across the Pacific Ocean.
Right.
So his question is pretty interesting.
Well, Art, we're seeing again and again in news accounts after hurricanes make landfall in Florida, angry fingers pointed at contractors cutting corners. I heard something fascinating during all of these events in the past few weeks that changing the nails, okay, the nails on roofing in Florida to a different type of nail can keep your roof on your house up to much greater wind speeds. But if you try to save a dime, your roof comes off at lower wind speeds.
That is interesting, and I guess it has to do with construction technique. First-time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hi.
Hi, Art. What an honor to talk to you. Hi, William.
Hi,
I live
there.
In the Pacific Northwest, Gig Harbor, Washington. My name is Margaret, and from the vantage that our home sits on, high on a bluff, we look one way in Puget Sound, the other way on the other end. One way is Vashon Island, the other way it goes out more towards the sound. But we see these tankers regularly. We see them fairly low as they climb out, and then they go out and around, and then we see them start to show up on the other side laying down their chemtrails. And it's just amazing to us. I mean, just amazing. We're an airline family. I've been a flight attendant for 15 years. My husband's a pilot for 30 years. I mean, we know what a contrail is, and believe me, this is not what we're seeing. It's so blatant. However, the other thing is that my daughter and I became very, very, very ill, and especially myself. And the doctors were pretty mystified, other than to say we showed signs of toxic poisoning of some type. So after everything that was investigated that they could think of, they suggested hair samples go off to a forensic lab. Now, I think they did that mostly. They wanted that on my daughter to make sure she wasn't being poisoned. The forensic lab called me with the results and to warn me ahead of time, telling me not to be shocked when we got them. But we did both have heavy metal poisoning.
Ma'am, please, let me stop you. You said you were a flight attendant. Your husband, a commercial pilot?
Yes, my husband and my son.
All right. Well, then your husband, his opinion, and certainly yours too, but his opinion is very valuable. And you're saying he's stating without question that these are not normal contrails, and he
absolutely
ought to know.
Absolutely, they're not.
He's not available right now, is he?
No, he's flying.
Oh, he's flying right now. All right.
Yes.
Well, then we don't want to know who he flies for. Don't tell us. does he have any inside information, or do you, about any of this, other than observationally, as you've given us already, which is very valuable? But, I mean, do you know anything?
I know some things that I just can't say because of
really?
Implications, the person that it might implicate. But he has talked to a couple air traffic controller friends of his that said that they have actually complained because they feel that it is clouding the radar and almost becoming an unsafe situation at times.
Wow. That's a wow. William?
Yeah. That's absolutely correct, ma'am. That haze on the radar has been reported. The deep sky source who manages air traffic control for the northeastern United States says, and controllers, by the way, at all major airports across the United States confirm that they are being ordered to bring in commercial airliners below these formations of radar-identified tankers spraying the particulates because of the hazard you are mentioning.
That's absolutely right. And the other thing they're doing is air traffic is changing. The patterns are changing. They're actually having days where they're you know, rerouting the commercial pilots because of that.
I can confirm that, yes.
Yes. And, you know, my question to you was, it seems to us in our observations that this seems to be the heaviest. And for us, you said sometimes there'll be weeks without it. I can say that here it's been relentless all spring and summer. But it seems to happen most ahead of weather fronts, weather patterns moving in. Is that... could that be correct or not? Or
William?
Ma'am, that's my observation here. I'm just north of you up around Vancouver Island, That's our observation as these planes come down the coast. And it's also the observation of people in Denver, Colorado, where there's fronts coming over the mountains, people in Phoenix, another hot zone. In fact, people across America have been pointing out for years that these are often, we see this chemtrail activity ahead of advancing storm fronts. And it seems to sometimes make them very much worse in terms of precipitation.
Wow. Well, that was an incredible call. William, she obviously knew a lot more than she was willing to talk about here on the air. I don't blame her. But there must be an awful lot more people like her out there. Now, you're the investigative journalist. You're the guy who's in the middle of all this. It makes sense they would contact you if they know stuff and want to talk. How do they get hold of you?
Please go to my website, willthomas.net, willthomas.net. Contact my tech support. There's email address right on the site throughout the site, and I am very, very careful of my sources. For example, our deep sky source, we're now 3 years into talking to this gentleman. He has not been identified. We will not, and I will not, ever reveal a source. So you are safe to contact me, and if you're concerned, we'll set up a safe way of communication. But I really appreciate calls like the last one, obviously, and any detailed information that can be passed to me would be very gratifying, let's say, after 6 years on the chem trail.
Yes, on the chem trail. William, your latest book, you do have a new book, right, called The Imperfect Storm, The Imperfect Storm.
That's right.
What a name. That's a cool name. So what is this book all about?
Okay, this book is the history of weather modification and a detailed look at the three hurricanes we've been discussing tonight. I've been working day and night for the past few weeks putting this out. This will be available as an audio download, a narrated download, with photographs on the net. Please check back, folks, on my website, willthomas.net, later on next week, and check out this new book. Or if you like, call this number, 1-866-470-0740. Quickly, 1-866-470-0740, and they'll put you on a list, and we will contact you when this is available.
And you're telling me The Imperfect Storm includes information about the last three hurricanes we just had?
Absolutely.
That is a very recent work.
I would say it's a work in progress. I'm just finishing the Ivan section, but it's ready to go starting tomorrow afternoon. It's ready to go.
Oh, that's really something. All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hi, this is Matt calling from Tampa, down here a proud member of the Hurricane of the Week Club.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay, just one thing, well, two. First off, the possibility that when Francis got seated, that a lot of the energy got transferred to Ivan, and also the fact that when Charlie was coming up the coast, it was heading right for us, and yep, literally at the last minute, it cut over and hit what could be termed probably the best part of the state for it to hit as far as minimizing the damage and death and all that.
Yeah, that is absolutely, of course, true. But what about his first statement that doing something to one hurricane would leave energy in place for another hurricane or transfer energy to it in that sense?
It does make sense. That's fascinating. I frankly had not considered that. It does make perfect sense, and as the gentleman knows very well, the hurricane did miss Tampa, and people ordered to evacuate or suggested to evacuate Tampa, some of them fled right into its path as it increased speed quite drastically, surprising the forecasters.
And intensity.
Yes.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was amazing, as was the fact that New Orleans would have been virtually obliterated, and
yes,
and as it was, you could hardly see a breeze stir in New Orleans. It
yes,
was amazing the way it happened. But, you know, I realize you can say, well, yeah, hey, that's freaky weather. That's the way it goes. Or you can let your mind wander, and there are other possibilities. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas.
Yes. My question is, do you think that HARP could possibly have anything to do with mind control? And if I could just explain why I asked that.
All right. Well, William is not an expert on HARP, as it were. I know he's looked at it with reference to weather control, but I don't know if he's looked into the other aspects of HARP. But all right.
The reason I ask is when Art played the harp sound earlier, the first thought that came into my mind as I was listening to it was kill him. Kill who? I don't know.
Well,
the next thought was please make it stop.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Now, I also had endless numbers of fast blasts when I played those recordings. And it was everything from, you know, that's really relaxing. Would you do it again, please? To, hey, Art, that made my back hurt. It actually caused spasms in my back. And so I got everything you can imagine when I played that, which also is worth in itself some discussion. Now, I'm not saying there wouldn't be an effect on people. Who knows? There might be. But I don't think so the way I played it here now. But that's what people think, and, you know, so what people think is really important. I mean, what do they say about sugar pills? 30-40% of the time they cure people? Maybe the occasional sour pill, 30 or 40% of the time or even greater, makes people think that something's going on. William?
I can speak somewhat to that, Art, because when I interviewed Mr. Eastland, it was for a major article on HARP. And I did look into this, and with Dr. Nick Bagich, who you know very well up there in Alaska.
Sure, sure.
And no, I'm not convinced that HARP is a, quote, mind control weapon, and I'm not convinced that minds can be controlled to make us do specific things with something as big and random in its operation as HARP. But I'm also convinced, Art, that HARP can definitely interfere with our emotions and moods, again, not precisely, but perhaps unintended, perhaps otherwise, simply because it entrains with human brain waves at that same cyclic frequency, and it can, and Dr. Bagich confirmed this, interfere with our emotions if, this is important, if we're close enough to the transmitter. So I'm not sure of the range here.
To further enlighten you on HARP a little bit, William, Dr. Bagich would also tell you that one potential use of HARP is to affect an entire army on the battlefield, an opposing army, at thousands of miles of distance. So I don't know how close to the transmitter you really have to be.
Whoa.
It may be an actual application of HARP.
Yes.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Art. Mr. Thomas, can you hear me okay?
I can.
I have a comment, and then I have a question, and then I'll get off the air and listen. I'm calling from the Salt Lake Valley. My name's Brad. I'm retired law enforcement. I can remember back 2 or 3 years seeing extensive contrails and stuff here from the valley as far south as the horizon, so it was difficult to estimate the altitude that they were dumping his stuff. It seemed like it was pretty low. And my question is, with the gel washing in after the storms, were any samples taken, and was any analysis made to match up with the product that was being dumped into the storm?
Good question, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Right. Okay, William?
Key question. The latest example of the televised reports, I do not have any kind of lab tests. I'm trying to reach the reporters who gave those reports on air, and I think it's probably late in the game now to get samples. However, once again, I can confirm that the earlier July test in the year 2001, this was of a thunderstorm, that gel washed ashore, and it was tested to be Dyno Gel. So observationally for Francis, we have a match. But in terms of science and lab tests, we do not.
Hmm. Are you going to be able to finally nail all this down, do you think? Is it going to take people coming forward to do it? What's it going to take?
Well, I don't know, Art. You know, we have lab tests. We have air traffic controllers. We have the woman tonight who phoned in. We have all but one thing. That is, a person on a flight crew phoning up with credentials or documentation to prove prove the statement.
Well, maybe,
they would go to jail for a very long time.
Well, maybe we'll get that. Nevertheless, William, hold tight. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM.
When you subscribe to the After Dark.
Beside the river where you were to meet me. On the ground your glove I found with a note addressed to me. It read, "Dear love, I've done you wrong. Now I must set you free."
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And William Thomas. Tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Jeffrey Long is going to be here. And in case you don't remember who Dr. Jeffrey Long is, he's one of the nation's leading researchers on NDEs, near-death experiences. He's the guy who brought us Sarah. And I know some of you long-time listeners will remember Sarah, which was arguably the most intense, dramatic, nail-you-to-the-wall kind of NDE that anybody has ever laid out on the airwaves. I'm always tempted to bring that back and just play it for you again. It's just incredible. And Dr. Long is back tomorrow night with a young lady, Vicky, who has been blind since birth. Something you've all asked a lot about with reference to NDEs in the past. Well, Vicky has one hell of a story to tell you tomorrow night. And I probably shouldn't have used that word. It's not indicative of the nature of the NDE, but it is one hell of a story. So that is tomorrow night. If you'll just stay right where you are, it's back to William Thomas and all of you. Top of the morning, everybody. My guest is Will Thomas, and Will Thomas is an investigative reporter who's been looking into chemtrails and now the manipulation of hurricanes that are about to affect the United States. William, welcome back.
Thanks, Art.
Is there anything tonight so far, before I return to the phones, that we should be getting to that we have missed or that you want to add?
A couple of things. That Operation Popeye I referred to earlier was 1967. We talked about NMOD 1975. Now, this is interesting, Art. After the NMOD was ratified in 76, this is the treaty banning weather modification for military purposes or any modification having long-lasting effects to the weather, the UN has now come back. My researcher, Sheila Farrington, informs me. She was a former legal secretary and really keeps my feet to the fire in terms of documentation. And she says, UN documents now show that the UN is in favor and is encouraging governments to practice weather modification to ameliorate human loss of life and property damage. So they seem to have turned right around on this weather mod.
Yeah, I'll say.
That's also, quickly, I went and checked Mr. Eastland's latest plans for all of us. And he, listen to this, he says his company, ESEC, has signed a contract with the European Space Agency to review the weather modification potential of his HAARP instrument up in Alaska. And he said now he wants to hit tornadoes with HAARP and turn them off. Of course, he says that will take an awful lot of power because tornadoes have power equivalent to atomic bombs going off. But he said, no worries, we're going to use high-power electromagnetic radiation beamed down from satellites. So how would you like to be beamed with high-power electromagnetic radiation?
Holy
cell phones give us
holy
problems.
Cow feces. Are you serious now? Are you quoting Eastland?
I'm quoting his website right now. A few months.
They're claiming that HAARP could affect something as dynamic and geographically tiny.
Yes. Yes.
That's incredible.
It's very frightening. All this electromagnetic radiation goes through us. We are antennas.
Well, I know, but the implication of this must be it would take an enormous amount of energy to affect a tornado, obviously. So in order to get that tight a beam back down from the ionosphere,
yes,
to just hit a tornado and not affect very adversely human beings on the ground,
doesn't track.
That's amazing. That's an amazing statement for Eastland to be making, and I would sure like to understand the technical way they could accomplish what you're talking about right now.
Well, I'm not sure I want to know, but he's talking about satellites zapping tornadoes.
Yes.
With some effects to us, some effects to wildlife, some effects to the atmosphere, but he's not done yet.
Some effects. Now, wait a minute. That's sort of a hole in the contract there, very fine print. What does he mean, some effects?
No, this is Will Thomas speaking. Because I've done extensive research. I've written in Scorched Earth and other books about electromagnetics, the effects of cell phones, for example. That got me fired from a long-term job with a magazine writing about cell phone effects. Made me put my cell phone away forever.
You wrote about cell phones and got fired?
Oh, yes. I did an alternative health column art for a couple of years with a magazine here on the coast. Very popular column looking at alternative healing modalities. I did a column on cell phone effects and the effects of eating microwave food, all documented with scientific research, and that was the end of my career with those folks.
Well, I'm no friend of cell phones either, William.
Good for you, Art.
Well, for different reasons, but, so it's very controversial whether cell phone frequencies, which are essentially microwave frequencies, very close to it, some of them are microwave, 1.9 is certainly close enough to that range. Do you feel you've proven your case with regard to the, really?
Stacks of evidence. We could do a show on it.
Well, yes, we could. I mean, but give me some high points in the chain of evidence that proves cell phones are harmful to humans.
Oh. Here's a quick one. Study after study after study, universities in Washington State, other universities, showing negative effects to humans and animals without question. Not one single study, not one, showing that they're safe. That's the high, I think, the high point right there.
Do they?
If you'd like to get into chapter and verse, you know, we can do that when I have a chance.
Well, that's a statement you made. Not one showing they're safe. How many showing they're harmful, actually documenting harm? That's a fair question.
I guess the quick answer is stacks, and the other answer is I can send you documentation of dozens. Actually documented, you can go through them.
Well, I know they have done various types of brain scans, obviously, when people are on cell phones, and I think I've seen some pictures that
yes,
look worrisome, you know.
Yes.
But I don't know if it's a conclusive case yet. You seem to feel it is.
I do. The Europeans have looked at this extensively, and they say that after 60 seconds, for all you cell phone users out there, you have 60 seconds to complete your message, because after that time, the blood-brain barrier opens and toxins could enter your brain. That's European studies, more than one, and that brought me up short, and that's just a sampling. I guess my bigger point is...
So you would not be in favor of two teenage girls walking down the sidewalk together, talking to each other side by side on a cell phone?
Oh, no, especially younger people. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. These things are really bad for children. And if I see, a parent in a car, okay, talking on a cell phone with two little kiddies in the back,
yes,
I am as incensed as if they were smoking with the windows rolled up, because that car is a Faraday cage, and it's bouncing that signal around the car, and those kids are, you know, their cells are dividing very rapidly because of their young age. These are bad news for children. The British, by the way, have come out making major newspaper stories in the last 2 years saying maybe we should take these away from kids.
Well, I'm for taking them away from everybody. I hate them. They have the audio of an old, you know, tin can and a string.
Yes.
That's my complaint. It's very different than yours. Nevertheless, back to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hi. Hello.
Hello there.
Yes, yes. Turn your radio to the off position.
Yes, it's off.
Very good for you. Where are you?
I'm in Pocatello, Idaho. My name's Bob.
Yo, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Proceed, Bob.
Am I on the phone?
No, you're on the air. You know you're on the phone because you called me, but you're on the air.
Yes, I understand that, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Bob?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Proceed.
Hello, Art.
Hello, Bob.
My question to you is, we've got a lot of volcanoes down, especially south of Mexico City.
Yes.
And they see a lot of UFOs.
The volcanoes see them?
Around the volcanoes.
People see them around volcanoes.
My question to you is, do we see UFOs around these big storms?
You know, more than you might know, Bob, that's actually a fairly interesting question. They do see UFOs around volcanoes, and I wonder if they see them around... certainly there have been a number of sightings around tornadoes, and it's probably out of your range of questions, William, no doubt, but...
But it's a question I gingerly approach for obvious reasons. Trying to sell chemtrails is harder... is about the same as trying to sell UFOs.
I'm sure.
However, having said that, I have some disturbing photographs and... email reports of these darn hockey puck thingies.
I knew it.
Flitting in and out of these chemtrails. We think that they are military drone, that is remote controlled monitoring devices, terrestrial in origin. But I can say I've seen the photos. These things look like real physical objects. I think they're U.S. military. I don't know that thing.
But they could be anything, William.
Oh, dear, Art.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Art, thanks for taking my call. It's Andy from Texas.
Sandy from Texas on the telephone. Cell phone.
Yeah, unfortunately, if I used the baseline, you'd know where I'm calling from.
Yeah.
Okay, the quick comments I got and two quick questions. When you were playing the tones, if you listened to the first one you played, the robot ones?
Yes.
When I was growing up, I had the little smoking robot with the same tone. Also, the second one, if you listen to it, a lot of police and fire departments are going to that high-pitched yelp.
Okay.
Also, the question I had, what does HARP stand for?
William?
High Altitude Auroral Research Project. Auroral, because that's where your aurora borealis occurs, because your electromagnetics are coming down to each pole like a big dynamo. And that, I think that's an outmoded designation, actually, but I don't know the new term they've got for it now.
It seems as though HARP is a project in sharp transition. It may well be. that it began as one thing, and then people began to see other possibilities in it, William?
Yes, back to Mr. Eastland and his menu. How about this, Art? Missile shield antenna. Sound groovy? Try 1 trillion watts.
A trillion watts.
A trillion watts. I think we'd have to leave the planet if he turns that baby on.
Wow.
Oh,
I'd sure love to interview Mr. Eastland. I wonder if his people would allow it. Probably not, huh?
He has his own company now, Art, so he could probably make that decision himself.
You think so?
I do. He's very proud of his accomplishments. It would be a fascinating show.
All right, Lisa, let's do it. Bernard Eastland, huh?
Texas, yes.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art.
Hey there.
I am still laughing over the holy cow feces. But you know, they turned the tornado off, but Amarillo just got microwaved. I'm a truck driver. I travel all over the United States. I see these chemtrails, and recently I've been looking to see if there's any just out here in the country, and I have not come across any. It's always over Dallas, Cincinnati, Atlanta. I never see them out, you know, just...
Caller, I have a question for you. How, in your mind, do you differentiate between contrails and what you're calling chemtrails? As a truck driver, you're very observant. You get to see a lot. But, I mean, how do you make that distinction between the two, or do you?
Well, contrails are the, left-behind jet engines because
yes.
They're... so fast.
Yes, well, I'm asking how you know what you're seeing is not that.
Because evaporation, a chemtrail is going to dispatch. A chemtrail, if they leave something behind, it expands, it leaves this long cloud zigzagging across the line, across the sky, and it stays there for too long.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be some chemical there to keep it from...
dispersing.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Well, see, I've wondered a little about that, William. I mean, you're in an area where, for example, I play those tones and people have backaches and people feel better and people have all these different reactions just because I play the sound of harp, right?
Yeah.
I'm inundated with it. It's amazing. And so there's a psychological... maybe it's not, but it seems like a psychological component to this. And you must deal a lot with that in what you're doing here. I mean, a lot of people obviously think they're seeing one thing and are seeing another. There's a lot of misreporting that goes on here, right?
I'm concerned about that, the idea that one person sees it, we all start to see the same thing. Yes, indeed, I've seen what looked to me to be contrails advertised as chemtrails, and conversely, what appear to be, to my eye, chemtrails advertised as contrails. However, I'm delighted, I must say, Art, to have a trucker on the line, because these seem to be down-to-earth folks who cover a lot of miles.
Oh, yeah.
When I hear from a trucker, you know, I listen attentively, and I have a question actually for our caller, and that is, are the truckers talking about the same thing on their CB or whatever radios they're using these days? And is it true that some of them have complained about fallout, particulate fallout on their rigs when they're stopped at a truck stop somewhere?
Well,
I've heard this.
This particular caller is gone, but you know the answer is going to be yes, and I know it too because I talk to truckers. You know, in an RV on a CB, you talk to truckers, and
yes.
They're fun to talk to. They're good guys. I like them, and I talk to them here too, and the answer to that is yes, and so you'll hear some other truckers as the program continues. West to the Rockies, turn off your radio, please. You're on the air with William Thomas.
This is Olin in Culver City, California.
Yes, Olin.
A week and a half ago, George Norrie interviewed Mark Purdy in Great Britain about his research on mad cow disease. Mark Purdy said that mad cow disease is caused by barium metal in the brain facilitated by organophosphate insecticides weakening the blood-brain barrier like malathion. Now, this is like human Alzheimer's disease, which is caused by aluminum in the brain. So,
which is something that was mentioned earlier as one of the contaminants.
Right. So could mad cow disease be caused by spraying barium in the chemtrails?
All right. It's a good question. And I've heard this one before, too. A lot of people have been asking about this. William, you want to take a shot?
Yes. Let's jump on something right here. This is important. The aluminum oxide in chemtrails is an inert substance. I've checked with doctors and medical researchers. It's like sand. It can give you an allergic reaction. It can pick up pathogens in the upper atmosphere and make you sick, but it is not refined aluminum, sometimes linked and controversially linked with Alzheimer's. Chemtrails will not give you Alzheimer's. Having said that, we do have anecdotal evidence of people with neurological problems, inability to remember things, even to form coherent sentences, that this is not Alzheimer's and chemtrails. Now, the barium is very interesting. I've written extensively on mad cow, and I must confess I'm not up to speed on the barium component. We have identified a barium, and there are varieties of this substance chemically, in chemtrails over Edmonton, as I mentioned. I do not have the species, if you like, of that particular barium. Some barium is extremely toxic to humans. Some is not. So we'd have to nail down the exact type of barium in chemtrails to see if this could be a factor. And as the caller at least hinted at, this barium would have to cross the blood-brain barrier if we inhaled it, for example. And I'm not certain that's possible, but I'm out of my depth here.
All right. And I'm glad you said so. When that happens to be the case, hold on. William Thomas is my guest. We're talking about things that are much bigger than us, right? The weather, that sort of thing. They are bigger than us, right? Or do we own them?
To burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and to use them to help us to
take a ride. To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Indeed, Coast to Coast AM. It's the only place you would actually want to accept a ride from a stranger at night in the dark. We'll be right back with William Thomas. All right, I'd like to have you all raise your hands out there. How many of you are comfortable with breathing what you see coming from our skies all the time? Well, look at that. I didn't see one hand. I just didn't see one hand out there. And that, see, that provokes the question, William, about jet fuel that I want to ask. And that is, even if you exclude everything beyond regular old jet fuel, and, I mean, God, we disperse a lot of jet fuel and its leavings into the air, zillions of flights all over the world every single day. That certainly does or injects or changes the atmosphere in some way or another, and I wonder if that's been measured. God, we're measuring the effects of cell phones on people. Why not inhaling the leavings of jet fuel, or is it perfectly okay? I mean, sometimes they dump entire tanks of fuel into the ocean, right, when they have a problem?
That's right. To lower their gross weight to landing weight, they can do an emergency
dump
of fuel.
Thousands of pounds, right?
Yes, exactly right. You've got a topic more taboo than cell phones. You have
really?
Probably one of the most taboo topics going.
Really?
Certainly, jet fuel, and I've researched it in chemtrails, confirmed, people can check it out, U.S. Air Force studies, flight crews getting sick. Art, we have a mass exodus. Military people listening in could confirm this. I've documented it with good sources. A mass exodus from the Air National Guard Reserves, the people who fly the tankers, are out of here, Art, because they're all getting extremely sick, at least many of them, from the JP-8 jet fuel that they are around day and night. This stuff is extremely bad news for long-term chronic exposure. That means that if you live around an airport, particularly on the flight path of departing airplanes,
right,
where, of course, they're at full power, low altitude, spewing
sure.
unburned jet fuel, move. Whatever
move.
It takes, get out of the way.
Really?
Because this stuff at low altitudes is very toxic.
Well, where's the EPA on this, Will?
Oh, the Air Force, I can tell you where the Air Force is on it. Studies out of Texas are saying that, yes, it leads to all kinds of kidney problems, liver problems, allergy problems, and even deaths, depending on exposure. I'm not certain. I'd have to go back through notes and look up the EPA, but the Air Force says, yes, they do admit this is bad stuff to be around.
That air.
Now, we don't know. Now, you raised a good point there. We don't know what happens at altitude with 5 million flights a year, but the stuff has to come down.
5 million. Well, what goes up?
They say
usually does. Not always, I suppose. It could stay up there and in some way affect the upper atmosphere. I really don't know. You're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Turn your radio off, please.
Yes, it's off.
Thank you. All right. Where are you?
Panagora.
Oh God, ground zero.
Yeah.
I didn't know you guys had phones back yet.
Yeah, we do.
All right. Well, good. Boy, so were you there through this hurricane, or did you evacuate and come back?
Where could we evacuate? We didn't have enough time.
You didn't have enough. Well, that's right. You didn't.
That's right.
The question I have for you, okay, is a nice gentleman called from Tampa. Is he implying that the government, with their chemical, moved the storm to Punta Gorda because they didn't want it to hit Tampa?
I think
because
that,
we were
that,
the
yes.
best city to be hit.
I think that yes, he was.
He was implying that, correct?
Well, he was. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that if the government could move a storm, I would assume they would move it away from the United States. Period. I would think. I would assume.
Well,
am I wrong? Right?
Well, we don't know. That's the problem. In other words, do they have a little bit of control over
yeah,
storms?
That's what
or
I'd
do
like
they have
to
a
know.
Lot of control over storms? We obviously don't have the answer to that question.
Yeah.
We don't even know if they have a little control. But, yeah, that's what the man was implying.
Implying, right?
Oh, clearly, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Take care. Right in the center of the storm.
Oh.
First-time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Yo.
I sense another truck. Turn your radio off, please, and proceed.
Yeah, howdy, Art. How's
Hi.
It going?
Fine.
The HAARP radar, it produces high-pressure systems in the atmosphere, don't it? That is capable of doing that.
I honestly don't have the answer to that question. Do you, William?
I don't think so. I can say that, as far as I know, it doesn't produce anything in the atmosphere. HARP operates on the ionosphere, which is our electron, the electric cap of this planet, a highly charged region, if you like, above the atmosphere. And I'm told by the HARP people that the beam goes right through the atmosphere. And again, you have to put something in the atmosphere, like chemicals or polymers, to heat it up. And then you could play with pressure systems, I presume.
Well, the reason I say this is because every time I've noticed a hurricane approaching the United States, it's just we have these enormous amount of small high-pressure cells that kind of pop up over the top of Canada, slide down, and push a cold front down past into the Gulf.
Okay,
right.
Well,
okay.
Listen, I appreciate your call, but I don't know that you can say that we know that HARP will create a high-pressure system or is capable of any such thing, but they're thinking about it. That's clear. I mean, affecting the weather in some way.
Art, we can say this, if I may jump in here. We do know that HARP can move the jet stream around. And again, my friend Bob Petrakis, the reporter for Columbus Alive, has looked into this, and he does maintain that they can move high-pressure systems out of Canada. I was thrown because the gentleman said create. But if you're going to say move around by steering the jet stream, the answer is a big perhaps. It looks like they
can. A big perhaps?
They can move the jet stream.
Have they documented the fact that they've moved the jet stream? If so, that's something I hadn't heard, and that's a big one.
We have documented the Soviets doing that with the 7 HARP-like transmitters I mentioned. That's an affirm, if you like. Now, if the jet stream can shove high and low pressure systems around, which I presume it can, then it's yes on both counts. But
well,
the jet stream.
Yeah.
I asked Bernard Eastland that question.
And
he said, yes, we can move the jet stream. That's how we built.
Well, that's a big one.
We built the darn thing.
You see, I hadn't heard that. If you move the jet stream, you move the weather. The weather generally follows the jet stream.
You have to. Stands to reason. You must get this guy on the air, Mark.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Hello. This is Security Officer Aaron. I'm calling you from KBI 570 Country, and a long-time listener, first-time caller, and I had a question about the law. It's been on your show before, how it applies to chemtrails and these experiments. It's the law against the government experimenting on the public and on people.
Oh, yes. Okay, William, where is this? Now, there was this incredible law we talked about some time ago that allowed for experimentation with the permission of local authorities, if memory serves me, or something like that.
Right.
Is that still in force? What's the deal?
It is in force, but a few years ago in November, and I'm not sure the exact date, but within the last 5 years, it was revamped. Let's modify that if we made the last 8 years. It was revamped. I know this for a fact. And again, it's in the book. I have to read my own book. It was revamped and said, oh, no, you have to get permission not from the local dog catcher, as the original law read. It said you can get permission from any city official, but this time, no, from everyone affected. And I don't know if the caller has been notified. I certainly haven't, by phone or in writing, whether I want these experiments to take place. But the law says, thou may not do this unless you get permission from everyone affected. And in fact, Art, you'll recall down at El Margot, or down in New Mexico, at Los Alamos, they were going to do a test some years back. I was down there at the time, and there was a huge public outcry because they had to go public and say, is this all right? Do you want us to do this? And guess what the answer was?
What were they saying they were going to do, spray?
They were going to release some simulants. They said, not to worry, just a little biological simulant.
And they, what are you telling me? They asked the people?
They published it in a newspaper because this was the new law, and the people said, no, we don't think so.
Well,
very loudly, and they publicly canceled the test.
I'm sure that would be the outcome. I mean, had they ever doubted that would be the outcome? You know, what do you get? A little form saying, listen, we're going to be spraying you with something. Now, we can't disclose totally what it is, but we'd like your permission to go forward. I'll just sign right here.
I don't think they put an ad in the paper in every instance.
I'll watch my local paper. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
excuse me. I made some notes here, so I'll try not to ramble.
Oh, good.
You spoke of those dino gel things they seeded the hurricane with that washed up on West Palm Beach on the shore?
Yes, I did speak of that, but that is a supposition, ma'am. We have DynoGel documented knocking out a thunderstorm. We have it documented being applied to tropical storms off West Palm Beach, and we have it documented coming ashore in one or two of those previous instances. I am making a surmise here that the gel reported by two separate television stations ahead of France's, and I am personally convinced of this, but I must say emphatically this is not proof. I'm personally convinced that this was a seeding experiment on Francis.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't have proof, but the observational data fits precisely with what we have.
All right, let's ask you this. Can you go now back to the company in question? And there's never any follow-up to this kind of thing. I mean, can you go back to the company and talk to them again and say, look, do you feel you had an effect on the hurricane? And if so, what was it?
Oh, but there was. I did ask him that question. Art, at the end of our conversation, I said, are you aware of televised reports, of press reports, of gel washing ashore on your beach? He lives in West Palm Beach, Mr.
Yes.
Cardani.
Yes.
And he said, for the record, for our listeners tonight, no, I am not aware of that.
Uh-huh. Interesting. What about their answer with respect to whether or not they accomplished their mission?
Yes, they accomplished their initial mission of knocking out thunderstorms, and he is convinced.
No, I'm asking about the hurricane.
Oh, well, no, he's not admitting to that. He's not admitting that they were involved.
But there was a story saying that he was going to do it. So now are you telling me he's not admitting they did it?
No, he's saying, no, we're not ready to do that. We don't have enough money to lease the supertanker, the 747 supertanker, that would be required to drop. Here's a number for you, Art, 1.7 million pounds.
Uh-huh.
That's about five Air Force tanker loads, not inconceivable at all, driving into the outer edges of a hurricane, not into the middle of it, and weakening, yes, the southwestern edge of a hurricane, or opening a hole eye wall.
As somebody pointed out earlier, and I'm not a meteorologist either, but if you weaken one portion of the storm, you do likely cause it, I think, or at least the possibility of a jog or a movement in direction of the hurricane.
All the meteorologists I've listened to and looked up agree that that is exactly what happens. Now, Mr. Cardani said to me, imagine a top spinning quickly. Okay, it spins. He said, if you put your finger on it, it wobbles and topples over. They're trying, he said, if we can affect one side of a hurricane, something that dynamic and spinning
mm-hmm.
that fast, it might just fly apart. And I guess on reflection, I'm thinking, gee, if the atmosphere of this planet is a rapidly spinning circulation and we put our big thumb on it with modifying chemicals, we could tip that over as well. The metaphor cuts both ways.
William, you know, I think I might like to interview the owner of this company. What do you think about that?
He would be delighted to promote his product on your show.
You think so?
Oh, he's been interviewed on Fox, CNN the last 3 days. His phone's been ringing off the hook, but Art, they're laughing at the gentleman because they don't believe him. I can tell you he is very serious, and he's convinced that he can do this, but his master plan, Art, is to fly over to Africa and nip the tropical depressions before they form into a hurricane. Obviously, it's much easier to wipe or erase a depression with this powder tackle something as big as a hurricane.
No, I fully understand, but I would have a million questions for him about unintended consequences, because here we're talking about the actual eradication of the seed that becomes a hurricane. So if you depressed, for example, an entire hurricane season, oh, my God. Well, you said it earlier. The air conditioners are turned off, and that could conceivably have a gigantic, we wouldn't have any hurricanes, but we wouldn't have the heat exchange, and so we'd probably have something else terrible happen.
Yes.
Wild card line, you're on the air with William Thomas.
Yes, this is John, New York City, WABC.
Hi, John.
Yeah, hi. Two quick questions. They're predicting a huge, very deadly flu outbreak this year. So can these chemtrails be used to spread flu virus? Because I've heard this sometimes they do have undesirable germs in them. And number two question, what is the probability that these secret societies are behind this thing to, number one, depopulate the world, and number two, to get people sick to sell their drugs to treat them? To make more profit, a profit margin.
All right, motive. You just don't imagine one good motive out there, do you, sir?
No.
No, I can see that. All right, well, so...
Let's take the big one. People are always asking me, is this a way to cull the population? Quick
no.
answer, no, it's not. It's too random, and when you spray pathogens from a high altitude, the sun deteriorates them, the atmosphere gets at them, and it just isn't effective. They disperse over a wide area. If you want to cull a population, I say theoretically, use the vaccines.
Well, there might be some terrorists out there, William, who would like to cull the population. And I wonder if our government has investigated the possibility of mass inoculations. And I know the last man could imagine anything like that. But, I mean, let's assume a really bad flu.
Yes.
If there was a killer flu of the 1918 variety where millions were
yes.
going to die, could you do a quick and dirty inoculation, if you had to, from the air?
No. The answer is no for two reasons, Art. One, again, the high altitude. By the time it disperses, it would be very ineffective. I guess 1B is that it's not targeted to the individual. And number two, there isn't enough vaccine on planet Earth to fill one of these tankers, let alone a fleet of them. Again, I think most of us would line up for the shots, even those of us opposed to vaccines. But by air, absolutely not. That's not a way to inoculate. Could you spread flu? Probably not for the same reason. It would be attenuated or killed by the UV in the atmosphere and other atmospheric effects. However, I am personally convinced, and the scientists at Wright-Patterson independently said this without prompting, that anything sprayed at high altitude is going to bring down fungus, viruses, and bacteria not usually seen on the terrestrial part of this watery planet, that serve as a matrix and bring these critters down that are floating around and reproducing up there that our immune systems don't recognize. And I am convinced that many mystery ailments are caused by these pathogens, these germs being brought down from the upper atmosphere. And
right,
they have already mutated.
All right, my friend. Now listen to me. Our time is up. There's nothing I can do about that, but I do want to promote your latest, audio offering.
It's an audio book at this point.
Yeah, because it's so new. It includes info about the last three hurricanes, and it's
yes.
called The Imperfect Storm, right?
Yes, that's right.
The Imperfect Storm, and then get it through your website?
Yes.
All right. William, it has been a pleasure having you here.
It's been really fun, Art. Thank you. And I hope that enough listeners can do something to get control back of their government and some of these mad experiments.
Well, it's certainly makes for fascinating radio. Thank you, William Thomas. And good luck. And again, I'll leave you all with this. If we're not doing weather experiments and or contemplating them, then, well, our government leaders are inept, at the very least, aren't they? And I'll stand for no jokes as I leave you. See you tomorrow night when we'll have a blind from birth NDE person with us. Good night.
When you subscribe to the After Dark News